Ladies and gentlemen, would you please stand for a salute to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a moment of silence. On October 18th, the Sachem family lost one of its own, Tom Toscano. Tom, who first joined the Sachem staff as a teacher of social studies in 1967, went on to serve as a junior high school and high school assistant principal, and ultimately as principal of Sagamore Junior High School from 1987 until his retirement in 1999. Tom lived by the simple credo, kids come first. Whether teaching, coaching, or in his various administrative assignments, this was evident. He seemed to remember every student that crossed his path. He had a particular fondness for the student athletes he worked with in his early years as track coach at the high school. He spoke with pride as he told colleagues of the accomplishment these students had attained in adulthood. As a principal, Tom is remembered for his consistent and refreshing approach, one which blended tradition and innovation. No one exemplified the true spirit of the Sachem family more than Tom Toscano. Our thoughts and prayers are with Tom's wife, Jessie, his children, Gina and John, and his grandchildren that he spoke of so lovingly. I would also ask that you keep in mind and keep in your thoughts and prayers the brave men and women in our armed forces who are deployed all over the country who will not be home with their families. Thank you. Can I have approval of the minutes, please? A motion. Dave Aronow, second.
Second.
Mike Boddy, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The next thing we have are recognition of achievements. Are all the youngsters here? I wonder. Charlie, could you check?
We have Mona Hecht. She's our administrator for guidance, and she's here, and she's going to introduce the students. I know she's been diligent about checking off people as they walk in, but with the parking concerns tonight, we may have some late arrivals. I don't know if you want to wait a few minutes, or you want to recognize them now and. Stop about 10 minutes into the agenda.
Mona, do you know who's? If we're missing anyone at this point? Why don't you just do a quick check? Do you want to do a quick check to see if they're here? If not, we'll. We could always come back to you.
Why don't we come back in a few minutes, if that's okay?
All right, we'll go through. We'll let the visitors come up. I have Sean Himes. Sean?
Sean.
Push the button, Sean, in front of you. There's a button. You'll see it'll turn.
Yes.
A little further away. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sean Himes. I'm a student at Sachem North High School. I'm in the 10th grade, and next in my junior or senior year, I plan on taking the aviation program. And I looked on the agenda, and I saw that you want to make changes to the program. And I just wanted to say that. The proposal would change, like, the structure of my schedule, and, you know, it would be hard to do other things I would like to do as well as that. All right?
Thank you, Sean. I think we'll go to the business items. We have a consent agenda for items D1 through D2. Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scavo, second. Second. Deborah? We're on a consent agenda on the business items for items D1 through D2. We have a motion by Rob Scavo. We need a second. Deborah, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Personnel items. We have a consent agenda for personnel items E1A through E5A. That runs from page 3 to page 12, the top of page 12 of your agendas. Can I have a motion, please? Who is that? Douglas? Second, please.
Second.
John? Siegel, all in favor? Any discussion first?
Excuse me, Dr. Murphy. I've received a couple of telephone calls from some community members regarding item number 1F, salary changes to teachers' personnel.
Yes.
The questions were asked, they're hearing that the teachers do not have a contract, yet they see approximately $117,000 worth of salary increases. Can you just maybe explain to everybody about that?
Well, presently we have a number of bargaining units working without contracts, but according to PERB law, which is the Public Employment Relations Board, the contracts, the only thing really that the teachers are working out is with a new raise. So when it comes to percentage raise, everything else in the contract that expired at the end of June continues. Increments according to longevity or if they get college credits for additional pay, health care, everything in the contract except the percentage salary raise hasn't changed or any new proposals they may have. So for this school year, we continue to give salary increments, longevities, all these things. So just on these type of increases when it comes to taking college work and coming across the scale, as of November, we've increased we've actually paid out $662,000 worth of salary increases. And really across the board, if you're looking at salaries on a whole, if you look at a teacher last year and a teacher this year, on average, they've received about 3% in salary raises, even though they're not working with a contract at this present time. I don't know if that answers your question, John.
Okay, so yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions on any other items? On for personnel E1A through E5A. Are there any other comments, questions? Can I have a motion, please? Oh, we have a motion on the floor, and we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Action items. Mona, if you're ready, are you ready now? We can wait on the action items. We'll let you go. Let these youngsters get up here.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Pomara, Dr. Murphy, members of the Board of Education and the Cabinet. As you know, the seniors are very, very busy, so I'm glad that many of them were able to join us tonight. The students that we're acknowledging tonight are some of the best and the brightest of the classes of 2007. On a Saturday morning in October of 2005, a year ago, over 950 Sachem students came to take the PSAT, and of those 950 students, they were among 1.3 million nationwide who took that exam. The National Merit Scholarship Program uses the results of that exam to identify top-ranked students, and 10 of our students will be honored tonight for their rankings. Out of that 1.3 million, 16,000 were selected nationwide as National Merit semifinalists and notified this past September. We have 3 Sachem students to be recognized tonight as National Merit semifinalists. The following students have been named as semifinalists. They are from Sachem High School North, and I would like to ask them to step forward at this time as I call their names. Tristan Bloom, Ryan Brennan, and Henry Zhao. At this time, semifinalists have to fulfill several requirements to become finalists, including maintaining very high academic performance in college preparatory courses, submitting SAT scores that confirm the PSAT performance, and be fully endorsed and recommended by their high schools, which these students, of course, are. I'd like to ask you to stay up here while I announce the commended students. The National Merit Program also identified 34,000 additional top scorers and has named them commended students. We're proud to have 10 students as such this year. I'd also like to ask them to step forward. From Sachem High School North, Michelle Aronson, Alicia Eberhardt, Vikas Parmar, and Paul Saylor. I know Paul is here. And from Sachem East, Robert Capizio, Avi Chatterjee, Nicole Cosmas, George Kerrigan, who I understand is working tonight, but whose parents are here to accept the award, Samantha Pamaccio, and Sarah Parslow. And maybe the parents can come up as well.
Do you have
the
script?
Yes.
Wow, that was close. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and congratulations to you. We wish you and your families a very happy Thanksgiving, and we'll give you a minute to leave because, you know, while we go through the rest of the agenda here. So if you want to take a minute to go, please do so. Thank you and congratulations. Thanks for coming out tonight. We're on page 12, everyone. It's action items. That's letter F, number one. Carol, are you going to read these? Yes?
Approval of the recommendations from the Committee on Special Ed.
Can I have a motion, please? Dave Aronow, second.
Second.
John Siegel, all in favor? Opposed? Thank you. Number two.
Okay. Before we go to the motion, I'd like to know what the feeling of the board is for which member.
I believe we said Fred Langstaff. Am I correct, board? Yeah, that's Deborah. You recommended Fred, right? Okay. Is everyone okay with Fred? Yes.
Okay. Approval of the recommendation for New York State School Board's Area 12 Director of Fred Langstaff. Need a motion?
Can I have a motion, please? Cheryl, I'm sorry. Second by David. Okay. I know. I'm sorry. Why did I call you Cheryl? Go ahead. I'm sorry. You're on.
I can't fax it. It must go in the mail and it has to be received by a certain date. We have plenty of time. We're okay. Yep. It's for Mr. Palmera to sign right today.
Yes, I have to sign it and then it'll get mailed. It has to be mailed. It can't be faxed.
No, we didn't. Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Deborah, is your microphone still not working?
I thought it was.
No.
Is it on now?
There it is.
Just so we had a problem with the last election, and some school board members' votes did not get in on time.
It's an official ballot.
And it caused a great deal of controversy. Yeah. So okay. I just want to make sure that Sachem is accounted for.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
All in favor? Opposed?
Acceptance of policy number 5152, first reading. It's a revised policy.
Motion, please. Mike Boddy, second. Is that Tony? John Siegel? Any discussion, questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Acceptance as a first reading of the revised audit committee policy number 6690.
Can I have a motion, please? Rob Scavo, second. Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We're on to page 13, number 5.
Approval of a resolution for an impartial hearing for student number 31623. It's an appeal.
Can I have a motion, please? Motion, anyone? Don't be shy, folks. Step up. Tony Falco, second.
Second.
John Siegel. Would someone close those doors back there, please? Thank you. Thanks, Joey. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
One.
I'm
One
sorry?
Opposed. John? John Siegel's opposed.
Approval of the five-year capital plan as prepared.
Can I have a motion, please? Tony Falco, second. Doug Duncan. Are there any discussion or questions on this?
Discussion.
John, go ahead.
I'm a little confused on this. Looking at the spreadsheet, it says priority one projects. However, when you go down the project list, there appears to be a number of projects that should not be, I'm surprised, classified as priority one project, specifically item 60, 61, 62, and also item 50. Yeah, I'm just wondering why we have priority one projects on this list. Sure. They're number 50, 60, 61, and 62.
John, I answered this in an email to you late last week, and 60, 61, and 62 aren't priority projects. They're additional projects for future consideration, so they're really not on a priority list. And as far as 50, which I answered in an email last week, if we take you over to those bleachers, and we've seen the repercussions of some of the seats over there, they crack when you walk on them. And it's a dangerous situation. We're replacing the wood part of the bleachers now, so the the group that was evaluating it, Bruce, and Bruce, if you can recall the name of that, Bruce, that evaluated and gave us an opinion, said it could last an additional 3 years if we replaced the wood, and at the last board meeting we decided to replace the wood. So is it a true priority one right now with replacing the wood? Maybe, maybe not. But this list was developed in July, and subsequent to that we've made some additional changes. But, you know, according to the state wants us to approve a five-year list of potential projects that a school district is going to do. Depends if the school district has funding or changes their mind about the projects, but it gives the state an idea of how to plan their aid for school districts in New York State so that they have advance notice to say that school districts are planning billions and billions of dollars, then they'll allocate their aid accordingly. So it's for us to approve, to send to the state, and the state is able to work their budget appropriately based on all school districts' five-year plans. And is that correct, Bruce?
Absolutely. This is a status report from the architects on July 18th. When the architects gave the presentation, there was no formal board approval. The board acknowledged that the architects presented the information as the board requested at the time. SED, when we sent up the report, they said, you know, what date did the board when we reviewed it, the board didn't actually take a vote. They envision that this list is going to be modified and changed and altered before anything happens to it. It's anticipated it'll be changed. But the list you have was how the architects were requested to present the list at the time. And it subsequently has changed, as Charlie mentioned.
We're going to have I know some concerns, and we'll bring it up later with some of the capital project discussions. But, you know, this list is going to change all the time. I mean, even we had Mike Bergen evaluate some of the schools and some things they missed. So we'll put those on the list if we are going to go forward with a capital project plan later tonight.
Dr. Murphy, just getting back to item number 50, if we can start there. The football field bleachers, we got the report at the last meeting, and that report said if we change the wood, we can get at least 2 years out of it. The structure was fine.
Right. I just said that a second ago, and I would say that 2 years is 2 years. Is it a priority one now? Back in July, it was definitely a priority one. Maybe it's a two. Maybe it's a one. I mean, it's all could be a subjective opinion about it, and we could spend a long time going through that. But do those bleachers would need to be replaced? Absolutely. And does the whole steel structure need to be? We're still going to evaluate that with the architects at a later point.
But aren't there other projects that were listed in the capital projects for all the other schools that were listed, item category number ones, that should be on that list maybe before this? There seems to be I'm a little confused. It seems to be two lists going on. One on the school breakdown on the BOE direction and this list. You know, which one takes priority?
We will decide that at a later point. This list was developed according to SED regs that a school district has to put together a plan. We brought in facilities management group. We used some of the ideas from H2M, and the facilities management group came up with some ideas of, you know, what really needs to be improved in the district. We're adopting a plan to send to the state so they can budget accordingly. Even though many of these things need to get done, if you don't have the money or you decide not to do it, you know, that's a board decision in the end. But we could also add onto this list. We can also take away. There's some things in this list that was developed in July that we've addressed at this point. So, and we'll continue to address things as we can, and as we have the financial ability to do so. But with John, there will be an ability later, and we'll talk about it later, to add to this list. But this list is just going up about trying to have the state be able to budget themselves appropriately for the entire state, not just Sachem.
Okay, one quick question then. This goes up to Albany for their budgeting. I mean, apparently looking at this list, I mean, and sitting in other board meetings, there's a number of projects here that were not deemed aidable in other board meetings. You know, the press boxes, the fields, I mean, what's the hurry to send them up to Albany if they're not aidable anyhow?
Bruce, you want to answer that
question? Sure. We hired, when the board authorized an architect to come back, and this is a summary of two binders, which are about 3-4 inches thick. The board authorized architects at the time to give a status report. That's all this represents. Last July, a status report of the buildings. That was already sent up. SED came back and said, when did the board adopt this, formally adopt it. That's all this represents. This is an accurate description of what the architect surveyed last spring. We now segue into this new conversation about a future capital project, which some of these will be incorporated in, and there'll be other projects that Mike Bergen came about. This is just a status report of last spring, and SED envisions that we will continually send them the new information and update them. But ultimately, we don't have the authority to spend this without voter approval. So this is constantly updating the board, the community, up until next May when the community votes on it. That's when SED knows they have to fund it. But all these interim reports are just reports.
It just gives them an idea of some of the things and what school districts are doing. And when you talk collectively, you know, 400 or 500 school districts, this is just a small piece of what they have to budget.
John, basically, it's a work in progress. You know, it gives the state an idea of where that we are looking at this. We're getting ourselves into the game, and as we go along, we'll look at it, evaluate it, reevaluate it, and we'll work from there.
Yeah, but Mike, my concern is we're putting items on here that going back even through a year and a half ago, every time it showed up on the list, I was told were accidental. It should have never made this list. And I'm just concerned that now they've made this list.
Well, they may not make the final cut. So am I correct in saying that, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Yeah. They may not make the final cut, John. We have to put something up to get into, you know, with the state. We have to show them that we are looking, that we're serious about putting a five-year plan together. And the state expects things to change. A lot of things could change depending on, circumstances. So this is not written in stone. That's my understanding of it.
Well, if that's the case, can I make a motion to remove those four items from this list if they can always be added later on?
That's not how.
I don't know if you can do that because right. H2M has evaluated this, and this is their report. We can't modify their report.
John, you'll have the ability to do that. Once this starts coming to fruition and formal proposals start being made, you'll have the ability to say, look, I'm not in favor of this. And if you get support for it, then it'll be removed. If you don't, it'll stay. Or something else may come along that's more vital and bump it. So, like I said, this is not written in stone. Are there any other questions? We have a motion, right?
And a second.
All in favor? Opposed? One. John Siegel.
Approval of coaching assignments for the 2006-2007 school year.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, second. Who is that? Fred Teneri. Thank you, Fred. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? On page 14, folks.
Approval of extracurricular clubs and activities for the 2006-2007 school year.
Was it David Aronow? Second, please. Second. Deborah Slinkowski. Thank you, Deborah. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Approval of 2006-2007 proposed field trips.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah Slinkowski, a second. Was that Fred Teneri? Any discussions on these? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Consent agenda for mini contracts F10A through F10L.
F10A through F10-01. Where is that?
This ain't no public, Douglas.
Up to page 17, I believe, right? So it starts, folks, on... It's on page 14, item 10, and if you take a look at page 17, you'll see 10.1. That's what the consent agenda is. Can I have a motion for it, please?
So moved.
Who's that? Douglas? No. Thank you.
Second.
John Siegel, all in favor?
Discussion.
Go ahead.
I have a couple questions here. Item 9K, approval of contract modifications between Sachem BOCES for the CAP Pro Soft program. I know this was a program that we were looking at for once we get the capital project passed.
Correct.
Do we need to buy this now, or can we wait until we see if this bond actually passes?
I think it helps organize these things from the get-go. Bruce, you want to start to explain a little bit more
right.
about this?
This is the planning year. This is when this will be most instrumental. If we wait to buy till next year, and if the bond issue should approve, then you would have a year loss of the data that we're going through now. Just as like we were talking earlier about this five-year capital report, that's the kind of reports that the board would receive, depending we have another conversation on, the kind of direction that the board would give the capital subcommittee, the reports back they want, the architect's evaluation. That's instrumental in this software. That's exactly what it does. It organizes it so you wouldn't have a – not you. The board wouldn't have a question what's aidable, what's not aidable, the type of expense that it is, the architect's evaluation. It categorizes that. And you would want to get that software up front so it has all the information.
So this basically generates reports that we'd need. Okay.
And that's right.
Does it work with Pentimation, you said?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, I just had two other ones. Item number 10.
10 what?
Item number 10. I'm sorry, that's after.
10?
10.
I'm sorry?
10L.
10L is where we are right now. That's the last item. John, where is your question? What item is it?
Irwin Hamburger.
Okay. Any other questions on any of these mini-contracts? Can I have a motion? Oh, we have a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Item 11.
Approval of an amendment to the contract between the Sachem School District and Town Bus.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second, please.
Second.
Deborah Slinkowski. Any questions or discussion?
Yes, one.
Go ahead.
Quick question. I see, and this is a five-year contract, correct, Bruce? Now, we're taking why aren't we taking the full $1 million credit? Or do we have to do this on a year-by-year basis?
Right. We're scheduled to pay $200,000 a year for 5 years.
Okay, so even though it's a five-year contract with the bus company, we can only take $200,000 per year.
Right. That's all we budgeted to pay. That's right.
Okay. But we can't reduce their contract right now by $1 million?
No. Each year, he would have earned $200,000.
Okay. Now, I know we want to update the cameras because the town bus companies have analog cameras.
Correct.
Now, is there a real need to update the cameras to digital? I mean, are the problems really that? Are there really those many problems
on the buses?
With the exception,
the cameras are tremendous help.
I think with the amount of discipline. Incidents that take place on buses that I'm just make the board aware of. These and not, I gave you an idea of what the major ones are. I don't give you the little ditty titty tat ones, which could be helpful for the building. But what happens from time to time is we go to the videotape and the videotape doesn't work, where this digital camera will solve a lot of those problems when it comes to going to the videotape, and we'll be able to get a clearer picture and one that lasts a little bit longer than some of these tape issues.
Okay, and the maintenance of the cameras, that'll be
our responsibility once we purchase them.
Town's responsibility. We're buying them and installing them there, but the maintenance will be town's.
Okay, thank you.
On our buses, Bruce?
No, our 30 buses we have to maintain, okay. But the 200 town buses, they maintain.
We're planning on purchasing cameras for our buses as well.
And theirs.
Yes, okay.
Douglas, you had a question?
Yeah, Bruce, are the cameras aidable from Bosie's?
No, it's actually transportation aidable, which is a higher percentage rate. It'll be a regular transportation expense.
What's the transportation aid?
64%.
That's better. Okay. Any other questions on this particular item? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you. We're on page 18, folks, number 12.
Approval of invoices due to J.C. Broderick and Associates for Environmental Consulting Services.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Second was Douglas. All in favor? Is there a question? I'm sorry. Are there any questions on this? Okay. None? Okay. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the appointment of SAT prep program teachers.
Can I have a motion, please? Tony Falco, second. Fred Teneri. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Approval of proctors for the PSAT examinations.
Tony Falco, second, please. Fred Teneri. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Approval of part-time committee on special education chairperson for the 2006-2007 school year.
John Siegel, second. Is Mike Boddy. Any discussion on this item? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of additional appointments to the 2006-2007 Committee on Preschool Special Education.
Deborah Slinkowski, thank you. Second, John Siegel. Thank you, John. Any discussion on these? On this particular item? Thank you very much. All in favor? Opposed?
Approval of the donation from Ret Life Incorporated for the Sachem Transition Program, a van.
Motion. Fred Teneri, second. Deborah Slinkowski. Any discussion on this item? Is anyone here from this company? No? Sure.
Does anyone know how close we are to actually getting this van? I know last year there was some discussions. There was some grants that fell through, or
no? The grants seem to be going through. We're processing the paperwork. We had promised a number of promises from some local politicians about getting the grants. The paperwork came in, and now it's working on approval. And we have approximately $45,000 in grants that to be approved. And once that's approved, we'll be able to purchase more than just one special ed van. We'll be able to do a mini fleet of these vans for this transition program, which would be very nice. And we could use them for other things outside the program on Saturdays when, you know, right presently we have a cross-country team with a meetup over in Manhattan College or something like that. And, you know, we take a big bus up there for, you know, four or five kids. Make a lot more sense to take a small van as opposed to a big, large bus.
Any other questions? All in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of the donation from Mary Rossi Equipment for Sachem High School North.
Can I have a motion, please? John Siegel, second. Fred Teneri. Any discussion on this item? Okay, all in favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Approval of a donation for festivals of music of a Yamaha Baby Grand Piano for the Sachem Music Department.
Deborah Slinkowski, second, please. Who's that? Fred Teneri. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Is anyone here? Charlie? No one's here from this. Okay.
Approval of donation from the Samoset Memorial Garden Committee for a memorial garden.
Mike Boddy, second. Is Fred Teneri. Any questions or discussions? All in favor? Hello? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed?
I think people have had the Thanksgiving turkey already.
I know.
Everyone's sleeping at the...
Approval of resolution to reappoint emergency conditional appointments.
Tony Falco, second, please. Mike Boddy. Any discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Approval of a food service bill.
Tony Falco, second. Fred Teneri, any discussion on this? Anybody want to take a little nap? Or all right. Deborah, you're on.
I don't know why this wasn't removed from the agenda, because I paid the bill.
I had actually asked to take it off the agenda. I don't know why it's still on, Deborah. So
this was you, Deborah?
No, Deborah was going. But Deborah wanted to pay the bill on it when she saw the note on it. So I actually asked to have it taken off. I don't know why it's
this
still here.
This expense was incurred during, you know, our forum.
So,
and we distributed water to the legislators that were there that evening. And
the one that we got all those grants.
Carol, how do you do this?
But I paid that $13.
At this point, I'd ask that Mr. Falco and Dr. Teneri remove their motions and their seconds.
I remove it.
Removed. Thank you.
Approval of a contract between the Disney Youth Group Programs for Sachem Music Department.
Tony Falco, seconded by Mike Boddy. Any questions on this, folks, or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Approval of certification statement for Medicaid providers utilizing electronic billing forms.
Tony Falco, second, please. Mike Boddy, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Approval of a stipulation of settlement with the Sachem Central Teachers Association.
Tony Falco, second, please. Mike Boddy, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Not that settlement.
Not that one.
Approval of a resolution for the refunding of bond issues.
Can I have a motion, please? Deborah? Wait, Mike Boddy gets to second this because, well, I was out of town. Mike had to sign about 150 signatures. He's now putting in for a disability. Carpal tundra syndrome. There he is. All right, Mike, you seconded. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you, Mike. No, you're more than welcome, Mike. All right, monthly reports. Any questions on the damage and loss summary? Determination of the Committee on Preschool Education. Child care, community ed. We are getting a report on community ed, aren't we, sometime
we're
in the
still,
near future?
We're still working on it. I asked Bruce and Mona to put together a note to the board based on their preliminary findings, and you're still working on that, right, Bruce?
Oh,
yeah, it's done.
Here,
we'll have it to the board tomorrow.
Okay.
Hold on a second. If you have a question, you have a question? All right, then put on your microphone and speak. Speak. Put on your microphone.
It sounds like it's on to me, Charlie. I'm sorry, my ears. I have terrible ear infections, so I'm battling that. I'm not hearing too well. Okay, I wanted to go back to the consent agendas. I didn't realize that we had approved the bid awards. And I apologize for that. There's a lot of confusion going on at that point. But I was looking at the bid awards. Am I permitted to continue this conversation with you?
Carol, can we have this discussion?
Sure.
Sure. Carol says it's okay. It's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Discuss away.
Okay. After a careful review of the bid awards, I wanted to discuss item L, the site sanitary replacement at Samoset Middle School. I just really wanted to make a comment that I really feel it's, you know, our responsibility to not only, you know, promote but support local businesses in our area. And when I'm looking at these particular bid items, I see that G&M Earth Moving, who happened to be in Holbrook, come very, very close to the annex, you know, bid. So I was wondering if we could possibly have H2M take a look at these two bids and give us, you know.
I believe they did that, didn't they?
It's bid. And Bruce, you want to just go over some of the what you need to do when it comes to bidding. Catherine Noko is here from our purchasing department as well.
Bid, yeah.
So when you award the bid, there are certain specifications. It is the lowest bid, but it's the lowest.
It's quantified as the lowest responsible bidder. It's the legal term is the lowest responsible bidder, and the architects are charged with making that determination and making a recommendation to the board. So it's really not based on location of the vendor. It's based upon their bid that they submitted.
But I didn't think it was based on location. I just thought that it would, you know, it's our responsibility to to support and promote some of our local businesses. And so I'm just wondering what the difference is between these two bids and whether or not, you know, this is just a recommendation from H2M. Is that correct, our architects?
Well, they have the responsibility to make a recommendation to the board, absolutely. And they have to evaluate, they have to interview the prospective bidders.
Well, I was just wondering if it would be possible if they could, you know, review the differences between these two because they're so close in bid. And personally, if I could hand the bid to someone that, you know, lives in our community, works in our community, employs people within our community, I'd like to, I mean, unless there's some sort of legality that prohibits
right.
us from doing that,
probably
I would like to promote this.
Probably the state controller's office would have somebody right. down here in our offices tomorrow
we
morning
of,
at 8 a.m. to meet me here.
Yes.
And possibly
I mean,
to take me
away. It's illegal.
Oh,
right.
definitely illegal, yeah.
If they're supplying the same product and the same labor rates, we don't have the authority not to choose the lowest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the
bids are very comparable. That's why I was just wondering.
And they're confidential before they're open for that sort of reason.
I'm sorry, Charlie?
They're confidential, so the bids are sealed, and then they're opened up. You want to explain that
right,
a little bit,
right. The purpose of the bidding is sealed.
No, I understand the process. I was just wondering, you know, if there was any legality prohibiting us from doing
there
that,
is,
and now
yes.
I understand
there is,
that
yes.
there is. If I could get an explanation of that a little later, Chris, you could just explain it to me later, okay? Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Board of Education subcommittees. Are all these subcommittees meeting at this point? Bruce? Charlie?
We have the legislative committee meets on a regular basis, the audit committee meets on a regular basis, the budget committee meets on more than a regular basis, and right, Sal? And the Capital Projects Committee, right after tonight, they'll have their first meeting next week. We have it scheduled, but we need some board direction, and we'll be talking about that
okay.
a little bit later.
Any questions on the Board of Education goals for 2006-2007? All right, time for presentation and discussion. The secondary program is on the list. Charlie, take it over.
Well, really excited about you know what we're doing in the secondary program, and I'll just introduce Mr. Paul Kopp, our Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction, and Paul will bring you through his presentation today on his vision for the secondary program for not only the 07-08 school year, but it really into the future, and we've got some exciting things going on.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy, Mr. Pomar, Mr. Boddy, ladies and gentlemen. As Charlie pointed out, this really is a vision beyond just 2007-2008. Last year, we began a very comprehensive review of our entire secondary program. And really, our vision, simply put, is about raising standards and expectations for all students. The items that I'm going to highlight this evening are pretty much covered in my memorandum to Dr. Murphy dated November 13th. It's available for the community in the table in the lobby. All the board members have that as well. As you know, there's increasing expectations for improved student performance on local, state, and even national competency exams. More and more emphasis is being placed on how students are performing. Our mantra, simply put, as educators, is that we want to raise expectations because research shows that by raising expectations, higher student achievement results. As a matter of fact, the research supports more and more students being placed in heterogeneous classroom environments with proper support. I wanted to read a short passage from an article that was recently distributed to our secondary department chairs. The title of the article was "Don't Water Down, Enhance." Just if you'll indulge me for a moment, the brief excerpt. Today's classes and classrooms are becoming increasingly diverse and frequently include students who are high, average, and low achieving, as well as students who are considered gifted, students with disabilities, and those who are at risk for school failure. Thus, meeting the needs of students from each of these groups while fulfilling the other demands related to content coverage poses an enormous task for the secondary classroom teacher. As we move to a more heterogeneous classroom environment, we know that there is a challenge being placed on our teaching staff. At this particular presentation where this article was distributed, we had Dottie Turner, who's been working with our district with the strategic instructional model, the SIM model, do a presentation on content enhancement. It is a research-based a research-based program that is proven to improve achievement in students of all levels. And this is what we're really looking at. We're looking at items that are based in research, that are supported by data as we make our recommendations. Higher standards. When we talk about heterogeneous classrooms, first thing I would like to do is dismiss one of the rumors that's been floating out there that we're no longer going to run honors classes. That is not true at all. When we talk about heterogeneous classes, we're really talking about removing the lower tracts. Students are being asked to achieve at higher and higher levels on state assessments through the elementary, middle, and at the high school regents levels. So as we did this past year in social studies, we will be moving away from the lower tracks where, frankly, the expectations had been somewhat lower. Again, the title of that article I just referenced, Don't Water Down, Enhance. Next year, we will be moving all of our high school English students into the Regents level program. In the past, we've run challenge courses, and we've labeled students as being extended, challenge, or Regents-directed students. The reality is the expectation is the same, and what we're planning to do in our English program is to support those students that have had some difficulty. We're going to build in a workshop type of a program to support those students, similar to what we've done with our middle school AIS program. The notion will be to work on strategy, not on reteach, not on just review and remediation, but to work on strategies that students can actually apply in all of their academic areas, not just in the English classroom. Next year, the state is introducing a new math program in algebra, geometry, and trigonometry. It sounds new, but if you were around in my day when I went to high school, that's what we took, algebra, geometry, and trigonometry. So we've come full circle through the sequential math program, the math A and B program, back to the more traditional. What we will be doing again in that area is we will have our students placed in a Regents-level program. Some of our neediest students, those that are mandated for academic intervention service, will take this over 2 years, as the state is allowing districts to award up to 2 credits for algebra. But no longer will the students need that extra half period of math lab that they've been taking through the extended and challenge program. And this will have some impact on our high school day, which I'll talk about in a little while. Moving away from the tracking will have overall a positive effect on our class sizes. What has happened over the last few years, as we've tried to maintain some of these smaller sections of the so-called challenge students, it's also pushed up our class sizes in the regents to levels that are really a little higher than the board direction has been. We've had a number of sections running at 30 and above because we really couldn't keep those numbers low and maintain those smaller classes. If we go to a more heterogeneous environment, we should be able to have a more acceptable class size across the board. Advanced placement opportunities. As you know, we had a tremendous amount of discussion last year and this school year as we implemented our global history advanced placement program as well as our advanced placement statistics program. I'm very pleased to say at this point that we now have more students enrolled in AP courses than ever before, and based on last spring statistics, we have more students taking and passing advanced placement tests than ever before. This past summer, when Dr. Murphy and the cabinet attended a workshop at through Harvard University up in Boston, we learned that the Montgomery County Schools had moved to what they call an open enrollment policy in their advanced placement courses. Specifically, in the past, we've really had a lot of teacher recommendation involved, and some students who wanted to challenge themselves and enroll in AP courses really were not given that opportunity. We learned that in Montgomery County, by doing this, enrollment in AP courses went up 41%, and the results went down 1%. That's a pretty good trade-off when you consider the number of students that were now given the opportunity to take AP courses. As we were listening to that presentation, the person sitting next to me at the particular workshop, who was from a school district in Virginia, said we did the same thing with the same results. So we will be moving more toward an open enrollment policy in our AP courses, assuming that students have obviously met the recommendation. Certainly a ninth grader wouldn't be eligible for calculus. However, a student who is, for example, an 11th grader, who in the past might not have received a teacher recommendation to take English AP, will now have that opportunity. We're also going to be moving on a 2-year phase-in of advanced placement offerings in our languages other than English. We haven't offered AP exams in the foreign languages in this district in a number of years. I spoke with Suzanne Groh, our department chair for foreign language, and she feels that by beefing up our fourth-year course next year, students in the following year will be able to not only take but achieve quite well on that AP exam. The AP curriculum really puts more of an emphasis on the traditional type of learning in the foreign languages, grammar and usage, as compared to the New York State communicative approach. But we will support this by doing curriculum development this summer so that our students in 2008-09 will have an opportunity to add foreign language as an AP program as well. Last year, we had some discussion with the Board of Education. Mona Heck did a very detailed presentation on our partnership with Suffolk County Community College through their Bridge program. A number of courses will be available. We'll have a list published in our guidance handbook of courses that our students will have an opportunity to enroll in, actually at the college on the Selden campus, earning college credit. And those students, and only those students, will have an opportunity, as we discussed with the board last year, to be dismissed early. But again, only if their high school course requirements have been met. And again, it would be for the sole purpose of attending courses at Suffolk. Our students will actually experience a true college course on the college campus on a first-hand basis with no cost to the district, as individual students will bear the, and their families will bear the cost of tuition as they would in their actual college experience. Earlier I mentioned moving away from the lab approach and the extended approach. For many years in this district, probably a little more than 15 years, we started doing this zero period notion. What had happened at the time, just a little historical background, at the time it happened in this building at South in the 9th and 10th grade when I was an assistant principal. When the movement came from the state that all of our students would have to take Regents exams, we moved our math and science programs into an extended and challenged situation for those students who in the past had taken non-Regents level courses. Because they were taking double periods of science and a period and a half of math, students didn't really have the opportunity to take as many elective courses as they might have had otherwise. So we added a zero period to give the students that opportunity. Now, after some 15 years of this type of an approach and the math curriculum changing and we no longer offer the double period in science, there really is no need to continue that zero period for the students. They have sufficient time in their day to take electives. In fact, in the last year or two, students with the zero period were actually being required to take an extra class, and many students found that to be almost punitive. Here they were getting additional academic support, and yet we were telling them you had to take an extra class. We found out as we looked at our rates of students who were being denied credit from the zero period, many students weren't attending the zero period classes, and really it was a disproportionate amount of students that were having a lot of attendance difficulties because of that extra class. Now we will be able to, for just about every student, move to an 8-period day. Some students with some extra services may still need a 9th period. So what we will be doing is, what we are proposing, and we've sent some information to the board on this, is really adjusting our start time, and we'll discuss that a little bit in one of our other discussion items tonight. But all of our students, rather than some coming in early, all of our students will come in at the same time, which will have positive effects on the entire building, the staff, as well as the students. And the 9th period will now become essentially a study period, an activity period, an extra help period. Our athletic program will begin after 9th period. So, for example, a student who is in the athletic program would still have an opportunity to attend extra help during 9th period, perhaps to use the library, a computer lab, attend a club. And if none of those options appeal to those particular students, we are going to schedule mandated study periods. A number of districts have done this. It's actually a very positive thing for student-athletes. Those student-athletes that are putting in more time on our campuses than any other student gives them a head start on their studies in a supervised setting, and it really makes a lot of sense. We've discussed this with our athletic director, and he heartily supports the concept. In fact, he did point out a number of districts that are providing similar type activities to allow students to get a bit of a head start on their homeworks. and so forth. We've talked a little bit with, in fact, extensively with our high school principals about this. They feel that they'll be able to cover these supervised study halls by either overlapping some teacher schedules or, in some cases, paying people for that supervision. But it's a very positive move. Staff-wise, you know, since we moved to that zero period, there have been very limited opportunities to really, for our building principals to have their entire staffs together. Some people worked periods 0 to 7, others worked 1 to 8. So now, basically, the entire staff will be on the same schedule, which will make for a much more positive learning community. I also outlined in my memorandum to Dr. Murphy some changes in our technology program, where a Sachem North student, Sean Himes, before made a very nice impassioned plea about the aviation program. We are recommending, after much discussion, that we do change the way we deliver the aviation program. In fact, as we presented to the board earlier, it's actually more cost-effective to allow students to take the aviation program through BOCES. We've had extensive discussion with BOCES about their program. Our students would certainly be eligible and would still have the same opportunities to learn about private pilot and to really do that career training. What we will do in-house is offer a one-year elective that will combine the highlights of our current aerospace course with some of the introductory elements of the aviation program. Students could then, if they so choose, move on to the aviation program through BOCES. What we are also doing in technology is introducing two brand new programs, and these are at the recommendation of Mr. LeBlanc, our technology chair. Earlier this evening, the board approved the return of the Robotics Club. We're actually planning to introduce a technology course in robotics. Again, many, many districts have done this. It's for some higher-end kids that really have an interest in that. They'll learn about design. They'll have elements of electronics in there. It'll be a very interesting and high-tech kind of a course. And we're also going to introduce a trade electricity course. We've had extensive discussion about career development. Do our courses that are not perhaps college-bound type courses, so to speak, do they provide students with career training? The trade electricity course will actually do that. Students who complete this program, in Mr. LeBlanc's mind, and certainly we, Dr. Murphy and I agree with this, will actually have the opportunity to go into that field as a career. We've continued really reviewing our elective offerings in all of the subject areas, looking for challenging programs that are rigorous and so forth. And in some cases, we've taken some electives out, and we've put in some new ones that we thought, again, could be more career-enhancing. An example, in our Family and Consumer Science program, we're moving away from a practical living course, which really didn't have that level of rigor we were looking for. But the Family and Consumer Science department will be introducing a food science course, again, for those students that might have some interest in pursuing a career in the culinary arts. One other point of vision, and this is, really goes beyond the high school and would also touch upon the middle school and the elementary schools as well. Much of what we've seen, we've had the opportunity to send some of our administrators to some workshops, both locally and out of town recently. And clearly the message we're hearing every place that we go is, if you want to improve and enhance achievement in your schools, you have to provide professional development. It starts in the classroom. You can talk about structure, you can talk about nuts and bolts, but the reality is that change happens in the classrooms. We are looking now, and as we get into the budget development process, we'll talk more about this, of creating some positions of literacy and or math coaches. These would be professionals from our teaching staff who are really experts at what they do, who will spend time working collegially with people in their departments so that we can continue to share best practices. A number of our administrators, as I pointed out, a team of about 10 recently visited a school up in Boston. And this was an interesting program, an interesting school, because it was an inner city school where nearly every student in the school was on free or reduced lunch. So you get some sense for what the demographics were like there. And now, after 7 or 8 years, their test scores are nearly the highest in the area. They've put in coaches, they've put in a tremendous amount of professional development, and really have created a professional learning community. So what we are planning to do in the next few years is to really make opportunities and encourage our staff to visit other classrooms, to share best practices, train our staff more and more in differentiated instruction so that teachers in these heterogeneous classrooms can truly address the needs of our high, middle, and lower achieving students in the same classroom, and also to develop a true curriculum map and pacing guide for our entire district. This is something that would constantly be under review and revision. But a curriculum map really is nothing more. It seems simple, but it's actually a very complex process. But it's really a map, a guide, a plan of what it is that we're doing. It doesn't necessarily tell people how to teach, but it rather tells them what to teach so that everybody's on the same page and so that we can really and truly have a K-12 consistency in our educational vision. So those are some of the highlights that we're looking at for the high school, and later when we have the discussion about the start times, we'll get into that ninth period thing a little more. So I would open it up to any questions that anyone might have.
Okay, anyone have any questions that they'd like to ask Paul? Rob?
Mr. Coppa, the honors programs that we offer right now, how many courses are we offering in honors to students right now?
At the high school level, we're offering honors in our science program, our math program, and our English program, and our foreign language program.
Okay, and as far as honors, what you said earlier was that next year the same honors programs are going to be available to the students?
Yes.
Okay, has there been an interest in any other honors programs, any subject areas other than the ones that are available from the students within the guidance department?
Not really. I mean, last year we did make a change in social studies where we actually moved away from the honors because we introduced the AP at the earlier level. And really the other subject areas which are more elective, to offer different levels would probably make certainly scheduling more difficult, and we wouldn't necessarily have the numbers to support an honors program in the other course areas.
Okay, because my only concern is that dealing with 11th and 12th grade students in my profession, I've had students take honors programs in 11th grade and then go into advanced placement programs in 12th grade, and students that were doing fairly well in the honors programs are now struggling in the AP program, and there's a big stretch there. And mm-hmm. that concerns me because we want to challenge a student, but we don't want to overwhelm the student. That's my concern. That's why. So next year, all of the honors programs that are available this year will be available.
That's correct.
Next year.
Yes.
Okay. I may have some other questions.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else is.
All right. I know Deborah was next. Does anyone else? Tony and then Doug. Okay. Deborah, you're on.
Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
I see that the program's moving in a positive direction, and that's what the Board of Education would like to see. Placing the emphasis on the higher standards is obviously starting to take shape. However, you made a comment in here that already we have heard from the Social Studies Department that previously lower-achieving students are benefiting from the heterogeneous environment, both academically and socially. I was just wondering, Dr. Murphy, if we could possibly get some statistics that's going to back up that statement. I'd like to know, how you're making that determination, if possible, and possibly maybe some kind of write-up that's showing the positive changes that have occurred socially on behalf of these children? I mean, because they're really making a statement here.
Yeah. Statement actually is a paraphrase of what the social studies chairperson at North said to me, Mr. Spellman. He felt that by not having the various levels and so forth, that teachers were seeing fewer disciplinary issues in their classrooms and so on.
That's good. I'm glad that you're, explaining that to me, but I wouldn't know that by, reading this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give you a lot of work, but if you could just provide some statistics that will show us the academic success for these lower-achieving children.
Well, we'll be able to do that toward the end of the year. And when.
So that's a plan thing anyway, right, Charlie?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay,
one of the things that, that has to be made is, the expectations that you have expectations for our lower-end kids, and the expectations for our lower-end kids have been watered down a little bit, admittedly. One of my dissenters of one of the things, some of the things that we've been discussing for the past 2 years stopped me at the PTA council meeting the other night and said, you know, I was up at PTA council, you know, last week, and all the things that you've been discussing for the past 2 years, other school districts are already doing. And I said, absolutely, that's what we're trying to get to, is that many school districts moved away from these those homogeneous classes and this layering 15, 16 years ago with the Regents Action Plan. You know, we've been just a little bit slow to meet that change. So we're trying to do things that are best for all kids, and we're trying to create the heterogeneous group so we have high expectations for all these kids so that they can meet the new Regents requirements.
Who's up next? Tony.
Well, that's a nice presentation, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
A question really regarding timelines, and maybe this, Dr. Murphy can answer this. Is this being presented to us for an approval or a nod to go ahead? And if so, I'm assuming it ties in with these time schedule changes, possibly. And is this headed for the 2007-2008 school year? Is that where we're earmarking it?
We hope to have all this. You know, we come to you as administration to the board to get your blessing on it, to say that everything is moving forward. The time changes, the whole package tonight, to say, you know, last year we made the mistake of having the meeting after the catalog was printed, and I learned from my mistakes, and presenting it to the board before anything is put to writing.
Right. So what I'm hearing is then you are possibly looking tonight then for an approval from the board to go ahead with it.
To get a nod to say, you know, we understand what you're trying to do. We understand the direction, the vision of the secondary program, and that you're trying to align it to what most other high schools are doing in New York State, and yes.
Okay. And again, I'm not against this. I'm for this. My only concern is, and not a concern, is that how does this, and Dr. Murphy, maybe you can answer this, how does this tie in with the 2007-2008 budget? Is this going to cause any budget change as you can see it? Is this something that's going to be addressed in our upcoming budget discussions? And if so, are we going to get this ahead of time, or is this something we're going to go, you know, just an idea of budget-wise?
Well, as far as, you know, school start times, and I know we're melding, two discussions together, you know, the school start times, there's going to be absolutely no change in transportation costs from this year to next year's proposal. And as far as the academic things that we're doing for the district that we're proposing, there is not going to be any really additional costs unless you start to look at what Paul started to speak about, staff development. You know, we a few years ago had close to $1 million in staff development. We're down to about $300,000. We need to provide staff opportunities to grow. Job-embedded coaches, that would be a budget consideration for next year. However, with the reduction in the extended day, is going to save a lot of money, and it's not just about reducing the budget with that, is taking those resources and put them in different places, whether it's the new AAS program for the English students, so that we still have a support in there for those kids who are going to the heterogeneous class, whether it's the job-embedded coaches or whether it's staff development, that we're going to reallocate some of these resources to better serve the vision of the secondary schools.
But then, again, you had mentioned then a possible shifting of funds, but then you also, I know we've been in lax in years in this staff development line, has always been a line that the board has looked at and many cases reduced. So my question is that when the budget time comes and we have a staff development line, and I would like to know, and at least one board member, how that ties in with this new program. I mean, it doesn't make sense to approve a program and then cut the funding of it in later time. So,
it's tied into a few items, not big cost items. Just, you know, the whole vision for the secondary school isn't subject to the staff development that the teachers will receive. Would we like to do more things with staff development just to enhance the skills that our teachers possess? Absolutely. And we think that's part of the plan, is to make sure that we are budgeting appropriately for those items. And again, we had, and I'll talk about this later with budget direction, $12 million taken out of our programs the last couple of years when it came to those things. We added back about $1.5 million, maybe $2 million last year. I'm not saying we're going to add back $10 million next year, but we have to have a vision for the next 3 to 5 years of paying back some of these budget lines, for example, staff development, for example, library books, that were really decimated by the 2004-05 school year.
Well, again, Dr. Murphy, I'm in full support of the direction.
But there's nothing in here, in the end, there's nothing in here that's going to prevent monetarily some of the changes they're doing in the secondary program. And there's really not that many changes being done in the secondary program.
Okay.
It's a long-term vision.
All right. And then just, again, when we discuss, we could do that at budget discussion times, that if anything is in there that you feel or you feel that's going to affect this program, I think the board should
I'm not betting to say the budget's going to pass and then, you know, we're making the program. Okay. Oh, now the budget failed. I can't do all these different things.
Right.
You know, it's going to work regardless.
It's going to work. Okay. Thank you very much.
Douglas, you had a question.
Yeah, my questions are for Paul. My first question is about I know with the new curriculum this year that for ninth graders in history we have pre-AP classes. I was just wondering what some of the early feedback you've gotten from those classes have been so far.
Actually, one of the pieces of feedback we've gotten has actually given us the opportunity to look at what we're doing in the eighth grade, because what we're hearing from some of the high school teachers is that we really need to beef up the eighth grade honors program just to make sure students are ready especially for the reading that's involved in some of the AP courses. But we're getting some very positive feedback on it. Obviously, it won't be till next year that the students will actually be taking the AP exam, you know, in 10th grade, but we've had some very positive feedback.
All right, and that's good to hear. My next questions are about the Suffolk Community College opportunities. By offering kids these opportunities, will we be lowering the amount of kids that will be graduating in January now? Because I know, or will it be staying the same, or because most kids I know that graduate in January from
it's probably going to stay the same.
It's a very small number now anyway that graduates.
We're not looking with this group.
Yeah, we only had about between the two buildings 60 graduates in January, so I don't think that will really play into it.
You weren't part of the discussions. I don't believe you were, Doug, last year. But we're not looking to try to take the top 40% of the class and have them go off to Suffolk County. It's really that maybe the 40th to 60th percentile who kids who are not AP, not honors type of kids, but are taking, say, electives in their senior year that they really don't want to be. And many of these kids, we have 30 to 40% of our kids go off to Suffolk County Community College because it's affordable before they go off to their four-year school. And so then, rather than taking a technology course here or a family consumer science course or, you know, just a general elective, that they can leave school early and get a jump on their college credit so that, in turn, they can jump off to that four-year school even earlier than they thought, because we're providing them the opportunity to leave high school early, and rather than take one of our electives to go off and take a college course. But these are not the type of kids that would take an AP course at Sachem. So it's giving those kids probably the 40th to the 60th percentile an opportunity, if they wanted to go outside of the district and take a college course. Yeah.
We should also clarify that Mona Hecht has had a lot of discussion with Suffolk Community about this, and any of the courses that would be available to our students would strictly be courses in areas that we do not offer in the high school, so there'd be no duplication. It's not like a student could take the course here but, you know, might take it over there. It's just completely different courses and courses that have no specific prerequisites.
Okay, and that sounds good to me. The last question I had is I'm not sure if the information's already got to us or has been a while back, maybe we got it, but if we could get a list of the classes that are being offered at Suffolk that our kids are going to take, I'd just be interested to see what classes they're taking.
We're actually working on that.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's all I got.
Anyone else have any questions? I have a couple of quick ones,
sure.
Paul. Have we considered approaching Dowling and St. Joseph's, being that they're both local colleges also, as part of a bridge program or some kind of a program to work with the...
No, we haven't done that yet, and I may have to defer to Mona on that question, because I know, you know, Suffolk specifically has done this type of program with other high schools.
I don't know whether Dowling or St. Joe's has anything to that.
One of the components we were looking at was affordability. That, you know, there's a group of people in here, and we're looking to try to keep it down, the credits, and I believe it's like $300 a course compared to if you're taking it.
Right.
a course at a St. Joseph's, a Dowling, or one of the private institutions locally, it could be $1,200 a course. And what we're trying to get is these kids to get that foundation of their two-year college going, and this way when they go off to their four-year school, whether it be private or state, that it hasn't killed them financially before they go out there.
Well, the reason I asked is because a number of our youngsters go to St. Joe's and to Dowling, mm-hmm. So I didn't know maybe this could
be a
head start for them also.
And Dowling,
is there a future looking? Are we looking at this in the future? Is there a thought of approaching these two institutions?
Yeah, we hadn't looked at them because we had a program with Dowling where our teachers taught courses and students could apply for the credits through us and then, you know, either use them when they were there or try to transfer them. And there was some concern about the transferability. The Suffolk courses, because such a large percentage of our students go there, and because it's a SUNY school, has a much better chance of the credit being used by the students either there or transferring out. We wanted to use this as a pilot program to see how many of our students would actually take advantage of the program, who would have been in good academic standing as a senior and decide, yes, I want to take a course or two on a college campus for a very reasonable fee. And also, again, as Dr. Murphy said, we do have such a large percentage who do go to Suffolk that we were hoping to target those students who would have the future there. Once we look at that, we can see, you know, what the other options are for a St.
Okay,
Joseph's,
I just want
for
to
example.
Know if that was something that was in the back of your minds for future.
We hadn't explored it,
okay.
But we can look at it.
I have one other question that deals with the technology. The one-year course that we have that we're offering in aviation, our youngsters will not fly at all in that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then if they opt to continue with this, they can go to BOCES.
Right.
Now, what does that involve? Suppose I've taken the course, I want to go to BOCES. What does that involve? How many periods, you know, am I gone for how long? Because one of the reasons we brought courses back from BOCES was so that kids could be a part of the fabric of the school district.
Right.
And not have to leave and not be a part of it, because most of them got back and, you know, school was done. It precluded them from playing sports and clubs and so on. So
yeah, it's a four-period commitment to the BOCES programs.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? Deborah?
Paul, I like the way this aviation program panned out. I mean, we've got the best of all worlds now. The children have got the opportunities, you know, for those who wish to pursue aviation, because, as you know, the enrollment was very low. They still have the opportunity, and the aviation program is basically intact. They're just taking the flight portion of it over at BOCES.
Right.
You know, and this is a great cost savings, you know, to the district. And with that cost savings, we're now able to implement two other great programs, robotics and trade electricity.
That's right.
This is wonderful. We're going to be serving hundreds of more students that are going to be interested in advanced technology. And I think that's the way we should be, you know, moving forward in the future.
And the trade electricity course is really another type of a career exploration program because, you know, Jacques LeBlanc really feels that students that complete that, it'll be a one-year, one-period program, would be the type of student that would then be able to go out into the field or, you know, get involved with the electrical union and so on.
Thank you. Can we take a two-minute break? We're going to roll the school start times right into this, being that, you know, they go hand in hand. But as you can see, a couple of board members need a two-minute break. John, do you need a break, or do you want to have another question?
No, he's going to say,
I'm not going anywhere.
We'll be right back. We'll stop here, because I have one thing to say as well.
All right. Yeah, a couple of the board members had asked me to take a two-minute break. Usually I'm the one who needs to break more than anybody, but a couple of people beat me to it tonight. Thank you, Paul. That was a good discussion. All right, everyone, please sit down. We're going to continue the meeting.
Oh, you heard that?
No, I didn't hear it.
Oh, good.
Everyone, please find your seats. No more drinking water for the rest of the night. Everybody's cut off. Put the tops on those bottles. Okay. John had a question, and I think Dr. Murphy wanted to say something, so
And we said we were going to segue into the school start time, so we're a little out of sequence here, but being that that's connected to the secondary program, I will segue right into that. John, you had a question about
this. I already spoke to Charlie about my question.
You already
I
did.
Resolved it. Thank you.
You don't want to share. Okay. And Charlie?
Yeah, I just wanted to note what Deborah was talking about with the technology program, with the robotics course. Interestingly enough, you know, we're adding this new robotics course, and I spoke to Jacques about it. Many of the exemplary high schools throughout the country now are adding robotics to their high school program because of all the skills that you do learn through it, the drawing, the design, the computing, the architectural components of it. It's really a fabulous thing with the electronics, and it's going to be a winner of a program in our school district. It's going to take some resources to make it a reality. But with the changes with some of the aviation program, we're going to make it happen. And I saw one of the students get very excited, but then I think he realized he's a senior this year. A day late and a dollar short.
Okay, let's talk about school start times. Paul, has anyone else come up there with you, or are you soloing on this too? Speaking of aviation,
just
are
go,
you going
Paul,
to solo?
Just, we're on a roll.
All right, why not? I had plenty of caffeine, so here we go. It is a tie-in to what we were talking about with the high school. The notion of moving away from the zero period will actually allow us to start our high school day earlier. We had asked our transportation supervisor, Stephen Shadbolt, if he would come back and do a schematic for us where with a couple of parameters. We wanted all of our middle schools to be on the same schedule. We thought that was important. Stephen, join the party. We wanted our two high schools to be on the same schedule. We wanted to build in the ninth period as an activity period with athletics starting after ninth period. And another very important piece is the elementary times. Right now, many of our elementary schools, most of our elementary schools, are getting out at 3:30. This is extremely late. It's probably one of the latest dismissal times of any elementary schools in the area. So we also wanted to move those times up. So Stephen was able to come back with a proposal which took into account all of those parameters. And as a bonus, he was able to also restore all of the activity bus routes to the elementary school. This year we made a change, really a budgetary cost-saving change, that our elementary schools only had the extended day run either before or after school every other day. The new proposal restores that on a daily basis to our elementary schools, so that's certainly an enhancement for their programs. And Stephen came back with within the same number of packages that we are currently running. So specifically, our start times look like this, or the proposed start times, and I think you should have the schematic in with your information. The high school start time would be 7:20 a.m., which is consistent to what many other high schools are doing. In fact, it's really very close to what we had done at Sachem High School North before we went to the 9:12 configuration. We were actually a few minutes later than that at that time. But 7:20 would be the high school start time, with eighth period ending at 1:40. The activity period, that ninth period we had talked about, which would again be some clubs, extra help, the study period, for those people that are in the extended activity, such as athletics, that ninth period would start at 1:45, and our first activity run after the ninth period for the high school would be at 2:30. Our middle schools would begin at 8:10, which is an earlier start than we currently have, but the middle schools would start at 8:10 and would dismiss at 2:30. One of the kind of side advantages that came out of this is the fact that our middle schools would now be dismissing at the same time as the high school ninth period. So what that actually allows us to do is we obviously have a number of people working in our middle schools that are involved with high school coaching. So they will actually
you know, no longer have to either, you know, try to schedule those folks so they're off at the end, toward the end of the day. But that time being the same, 2:30, they'll be able to get to the practices, you know, in ample with ample amount of time. The elementary start times, two of our schools would go back to an earlier time, an 8:30 start. That would be Nokomis and Tecumseh, which traditionally in the district had been the earlier schools. Our other 10 elementary schools would start at 9:15, making the dismissal times 2:30 for the earlier buildings and 3:15. So it buys us 15 additional minutes actually earlier for the start and dismissal of the majority of our elementary schools. Steve, did you want to comment on any of that?
Something else that was taken into account with this also is with the third tier of schools being the 10 elementary schools, currently we're running about, on a given day, between 9 and 11 buses arriving 2 to 3 minutes late to the third set of schools right now. So it still is a little bit of confusion for some of the elementary schools who may have 8 of their 10 buses or 9 of their 10 buses at a given time when their last bell rings. We've added an additional 5 minutes into there, so we should have enough leeway that every bus at the elementary level should be in the parked position before any student steps onto the bus platform, which was a huge concern of mine ever since I've been here. So we're hoping to have every bus parked and shut off prior to an elementary school student stepping on a bus platform.
Again, just want to reiterate the highlights of this. As I mentioned before, again, we're restoring the extended day runs at the elementary schools to an everyday service rather than every other day as we're doing this year. No additional packages, and so in terms of budgetary cost, it's the same. All the middle schools have the same time slot. And Stephen's proposal has actually added additional buses for the high school since there would no longer be that staggered start time of a zero and a first period. We're actually adding two additional runs to each of the high school to accommodate that.
One other thing, we keep saying that there's no additional cost to transportation. There's no additional cost other than the percentage increase in the contract. There's no additional packages, so we'd still be working with 137 buses total servicing the community, but there still would be the incremental percentage cost from the contractor based on the five-year contract.
Thank you, Steve. Is there anything else, Paul? Or can we? Does anyone have any questions on this? Tony and then Deborah? Okay.
Just give me a comparison, Paul, from the elementary release time now and then the proposed. What is the time difference? Leaving earlier, I'm assuming now, right?
10 of the schools, actually 4 of the schools are an earlier start time at this time. That's 8:55 to a 2:55 day. 2 of those schools will go to 8:30. The other 2 schools will move ahead to a 9:15 start time. And the 8 schools presently are on a 9:30 to 3:30 day. They will go back to a 9:15 to 3:15 day.
So it's about a 15-minute difference. Now, does this in any way, was this way affect child care at all? I mean, because a lot of these kids are some of them are going to be staying. Will that affect cost in any way? Will that affect staffing in any way, that extra 15 minutes?
Child care will start at the same time, 7 a.m. every morning, and will still end at 6 p.m., but there's no additional charge for the extended amount of time that the kids are in the program. It's a per-day fee.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Deborah?
So we're not adding additional buses. What was the problem with the timing schedule? You said that 9 of the buses were getting to their destinations late. Currently, they're getting there late.
Yeah, and by late, that means they're getting there for a 3:30 school between 3:30 and 3:32, so that there are students on the platform at 3:30.
So why are they getting there late?
Because it takes too much time for them to leave the middle school at 2:58. To get to their current school up at either Winona or Cayuga by 3:30. So they only have 32 minutes in that procedure, where next year they'll have 45 minutes. so they'll have an extra 7 minutes to get to their destination. So they should be there 3 or 4 minutes prior to any students reaching the bus platform without extending anybody's day, but just simply realigning them.
Didn't we know that last year, Steve? I mean, didn't we know that we were going
to
run?
But we didn't want to push the end stop, the last time for any elementary student beyond 3:30. So the parameter was 3:30 for elementary to be dismissed. That's why we were wiggling that we have a 2:58 middle school instead of a 3 o'clock or a 2:55. We had to split hairs to get the middle school at the correct time because we had zero period high school starting so early. You couldn't just push that up 3 or 4 minutes because it's got awful early now.
In order to make the $500,000 savings in transportation last year, we really had to change the parameters in a way that made it everything very, very tight. And if everything worked perfectly, you know, the buses would run on time. But, you know, there are times that things just don't work out in a perfect system. For next year, we're proposing these changes so we make it easier on everyone overall. The structure is more consistent at the high school, the middle school, and in turn, we're really making a dramatic improvement at the elementary school by moving up these start times because we've heard from many of the elementary parents that their concerns the kids are getting out too late, and we're hearing from the elementary principals that parents are coming up at the schools just to pick up their kids to take them off to their afternoon activities, and there's some dissension out there about these times, and the emails that I've answered the parents saying that we're proposing to make some changes, they're very accepting of what they're hearing, very receptive of what they're hearing.
Okay, so we're still keeping the reduced cost,
the reduced
$500,000.
Right, exactly.
Too bad we didn't come up with this plan last year.
It wouldn't have worked last year due to the curricular needs at the high school. When Paul said earlier that the math is changing, you're not having the extended math because of the curriculum change state done by the state, this in turn opened up this potential improvement in our transportation system.
Okay, the only concern I do have is that the high school students will be getting to school very early.
When you look at these start times, and Paul and Mona Hecht, they did a survey throughout the area of school start times. These are not out of the ordinary for school start time. They're consistent with many local districts and their start times. Our elementary start times are so out of whack, it's ridiculous. And our high school start time for regular period, the lateness of it is really one of the latest start times around. So this will improve everything and bring us to be consistent with what other elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools are doing.
So 7:20 is a late start time in
comparison? That's a basic and normal high school start time.
Yeah, what we found was anywhere from 7:10 to 7:30 pretty much. So we're right in the ballpark with the 7:20.
Any other questions?
Paul, if you can recall, the school start times several years ago were?
Before the reconfiguration, Sachem North started its first period at 7:30. At the time, there was no zero period for 11th and 12th grades, so South had a later start time because we had the zero period. In fact, the junior highs actually started at 7:32 before the reconfiguration.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Douglas.
My question isn't about the start times. I had a question about the ninth period, so I can hold my question if anyone else has a question about this. Or
I had one thing about the elementary schools. The parents have been notified about this already, I assume. I know that Bob Neufeld and Gloria Flynn, Tecumseh and Nokomis principals, they traditionally had an 8 a.m. start. So their parents, they said they had spoken to their parents. This was a while ago. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. And they said that their parents were in favor of moving back, you know, going to an earlier time. I think it's beneficial, being someone who's worked here and had to schedule after school workshops and so on, to have as many schools, you know, ending at the same time. It makes it a lot easier. And I think for the high school kids, while it's an early start for them, it makes it a little easier for them in the afternoons to get into their sports and clubs and so on. Have we notified parents or not?
Yeah, not until we received any type of board.
Okay. Do you need us to give you a go-ahead on this?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else? No? No? Okay. Rob?
Yeah, my only question is, why is there such a discrepancy between the two early schools and the 10 later elementary schools? Why are some schools starting at 8:30 and other schools starting at...
It's just about, sometimes the district is at the mercy of transportation and the amount of packages you can run at given periods of time. So to make everything run efficiently and effectively, you have to balance off these packages. And, Steve can get into it more detailed, but that's what it comes down to. You're at the mercy of sometimes transportation. Ideally, we'd like to have them all at the same time, but if you did do something like that, you would have to add additional packages to make it happen, and that could be really, hundreds of thousands of dollars because you're talking at $58,000 a package. So when you balance off these packages, you can balance off the high schools at the same time, the middle schools at the same time, and most of the elementary schools, but two are just out there because of balancing off, having this equity of runs, all these 134 buses running at this time, and then the next run at that time, and then the next run at that time. You just can't make it happen. You can make it happen, but it's big bucks.
It's costly.
In addition to that, an elementary route, we try to keep to 25 minutes in length. And if it takes them 5 to 7 minutes to get out of the school, you're not talking about a 32-minute window. And if we're taking 10 minutes travel time to get to the next school, so say a Tecumseh bus finishes its Tecumseh route, it then has to drive to Linwood. So we give it 10 minutes to do that. So now you're at a 42-minute window. In order to make sure that bus is in its slot, we said 45 minutes. Last year we said 39 to 40 minutes, and we're falling 2 or 3 minutes short between 9 and 11 times a day. So that was the reason for the 8:30 start. And the concern at Nokomis and Tecumseh was that 8:55 was too late for them. In the perfect world, they'd like to be closer to 8 o'clock. So 8:30 fit very well for my schedule and for the schematic, and also was leaning toward what the principals were saying that their parents wanted. So since it was a win-win, that's where we ended up. We could massage it 5 minutes later or earlier. If we went later, we would have to really look at which routes went where to ensure that everybody was in their parking spot before students hit the curbs to eliminate what we have this year. If we wanted to go earlier than that, you always could do that. If for some reason you want to go 8:20 at those schools, that would not be a problem for transportation at that point. I wouldn't go earlier than that because then the afternoon you start affecting, will they be done with their east or north bus run prior to getting to that elementary school? Because high school runs tend to be 40 minutes long because of the distances they have to travel.
Well, what would be the earliest that we could bring the elementary schools to, the 9:15 starts? Is there any way that'll ever eventually come down to 9 o'clock?
No.
At 11?
Everything would have to move.
Everything would have to move then. That's what I'm saying. It's taking 42 minutes currently, we're figuring. And right now we have 45 minutes. If we're starting at 8:30 at the other session, 9:15 is the first time we can safely start that session and still make it to all our schools on time.
I remember we looked, I think it was either 2 or 3 years ago, we looked at, starting all the buildings at one time, earlier times, the elementary schools, and the cost was prohibitive. I know we had people. I know Harry Barton did a lot of research looking into moving packages around with all of the people from transportation, and it became so cost prohibitive that we couldn't do it. So that's why we are where we are. But it looks good. So do you need a leaning from the board on this? All right.
I'd like a leaning on both the on second, both on the issues? Secondary and the school start times.
All right. Is there anyone else that has anything so we can take this leaning and move on? All right. Rob, are you okay with it? David? Deborah? Yes? Fred? Mike? Yep. I'm okay with it.
Yes?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Doug had a question earlier about ninth period.
Ninth period, Doug?
Yeah. Just for Paul. I know with ninth period that we're talking about mandating that the athletes stay after for that ninth period. This works perfectly on the middle school level, but when you get to the high schools, you have varsity, JV, JV9. They all don't practice right after school or right after ninth period. Sometimes they start at 5, 7 o'clock. Just something to keep in mind. Are we going to be mandating that those kids stay after as well?
No, actually, we spoke to the athletic director about that, and certainly in the winter when it's all dependent upon gym space and the basketball teams are coming in later, they would certainly not be involved with that mandated study period. But in the fall, when it's more of an outdoor sport type of a situation, that's when that would take place.
Okay, that was my only concern. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Direction right now from us to move ahead with everything. We'll go into capital projects direction. I'm sorry, budget direction, then we'll do capital projects. Budget direction. Who's going to take the lead on this?
I think both Bruce and I will speak about it. Last year was my first year involved with the budget, so we spoke with the board at the November meeting. We asked for some direction in terms of how would you like the administration to approach the budget. There was the idea of the notion of a quote, zero-based direction. So that's what we'd like to consider. If you want to look towards the rolling over method, the zero-based budgeting, or, let administration come up with a vision for what you want to see the budget look like for next year, we'll try to deliver in terms of programs and services for the community. Are there things that you want to look at the addition of programs and initiatives to enhance student performance, the vision? We want to look at budget lines for next year and remembering when we're doing the budget that, as I mentioned earlier, 2004-2005 was certainly a difficult year, and there are still budget lines that haven't been replenished and have suffered greatly for the past couple of years, whether they be library books, instructional supplies, staff development, maintenance supplies, security, class sizes. These are things that we have to start to look to start adding back into certain lines and being aware of it when we're budgeting. We're aware of it right now as an administration. We're going to make the board more aware of it as we go through the process from December to May. And we also want, direction in terms of the budget book. We've had a book that we've used in the past. I think the administration is very comfortable with it, and you want to see if the board still likes the present format, or are they looking for something different from administration. Bruce?
Those are the broad points, Charlie. You hit them all. And if the board had any specific presentation that they would like to see during the budget deliberations starting in January, February, if there are special areas that you would like to see a presentation on, special reports that you would like to see, we're collecting the data this week, next week. We can inform the administrators, the budget supervisors, if there's any particular area that the board wants to key in for 07-08 budget.
Does anybody want to make a comment or chip in on this? Anyone? All right, let's start. Deborah, then John, and Douglas.
Just a comment on a presentation, as Bruce just so politely said we could get. After reading Standards and Poor's, I see that, despite the fact that our accounting procedures are commendable and that we've received a AA rating, we still have two crucial areas that are lacking. And I'll just read them to you here. The district management practices are considered good under Standard & Poor's financial management assessment, and FMA of good indicates that practices are deemed currently good but not comprehensive. So that concerns me. What are we going to do to alleviate that particular issue? Also says the district maintains the minimum fund balance reserve outlined by state statute but does not try to fund other reserves authorized by state statute. Conversely, long-term financial planning is less defined, and the district does not have a formal debt management guidelines beyond what is prescribed by state statute. And I was, this is a critical aspect of, governing our finances, and I was wondering if we were going to look into those particular issues.
Right. There's a GASB regulations which mandate or suggest how school districts fund the reserves,
We have an actuarial study right now, and it's really post-employment benefits. When they come back, they're going to recommend to the school district, to the board, what level of funding. That's specifically what Standard & Poor's is talking about. The problem as it exists right now, there is no accounting code to even to put the money in. It's a suggested code. Then we, right now, our total reserves are a little more than $30 million. This report can be in excess of $100 million. As Mary Ann Van Dyne told us a few months ago, the Nassau-Boces, and we're larger than Nassau-Boces, that was their report. So that's going to be a major impact on how the board is going to fund these reserves and how we're going to deal with these post-employment benefits. That is going to have to be part of the conversation for 07-08 budget. That's what exactly Standard & Poor's is talking about.
You have something in mind? I mean, you're going to be presenting something.
Well, it's going to be incorporated into the whole budget, absolutely. The level of reserves is part of the budget discussion. When we get to that conversation, the board is going to have to make a decision, as we did last year, on how we handle the reserves and our fund balances.
Who was up next? John?
Charlie, I'm a little confused. What direction are you looking for? I mean, are you looking for, besides how we'd like to see the budget come out document-wise, you know, what dollar value and where we're looking
for? I'm not looking for percentage unless the board, that's the direction that they want to give. But if it's handling the budget we've handled in the past, which is rollover or zero-based, or do you just want me to do what I did last year, which is present the board with what I think is a comprehensive program for the kids in the community, trying to be cost-effective, taxpayer-sensitive, and having a great program here. And if that's the direction, we'll try to deliver. I have a vision for some of the things that we should start to add back and enhance because of just issues that we're dealing with in the schools. If that's acceptable, by December, we'll start presenting the board with different things and doing mini presentations, whether it be library books or instructional coaches or reducing class sizes, dealing with middle school athletics, you name it. We have a list of things that we'd like to address for the 07-08 budget. And the biggest concern, we just have to keep in mind that we have contractual settlements or contracts out there, and how are we going to fund these things coupled with all the other needs of our district?
Okay, so would it be possible? I mean, I'd like to see, a zero-based budget going back to what we really need to spend, and also, a second list of a wish list, if you will, of all the programs you envision to put back in there with a dollar value cost.
In my cover note to the board last year, based on the budget, we put a whole list of the good, the bad, the ugly, and then we went through it together. What I do not want to do is I do not want to put the board in the position and I, quote, be bad guys and start making cuts or based on, administration not coming forward and making cuts. So we should be able to provide those cuts. If you tell me you need $1 million or $500,000 or $250,000, let me do it, bring it back to you so we can do it internally rather than having the board look through the budget binder and then say, well, here's $250,000 or here's $500,000. Well, I'd rather do it and then make the recommendation to the board.
Good. Thank you.
Is everyone okay with that? Deborah, you have a question?
If we roll it over, Dr. Murphy, that will still include that $1.7 million that we used for capital improvements last year.
That's not going to happen for next year. Not rolling over that $1.7 million in.
Okay, so we're really then we're reducing it.
Well, that's being taken out. That was a one-shot.
One-shot deal. So it's out of the budget.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're not at the 267 right now. We're down about 265. Is that correct?
Right, but it's.
I just wanted to make sure that it was out of the budget.
Yes, it's out of the budget.
Okay.
It wasn't 1.7, wasn't it 2.5 because we had purchases we also made?
Approximately, we put in $2.5 million of revenue
And we're going to expend, we're estimating at what right now, Bruce, based on the bids?
We didn't get it on, but about 1.4, 1.5.
Yeah. So there's going to be some fund balance available from the capital projects.
Right.
So the budget will go down, I'm sorry. So the budget will go down $2.5 million from where we are.
$2.5 million, correct.
Yeah. That's the revenue. You're talking two different things. One is the expenditure side, one is the revenue side. We're not going to bring in the capital revenue of the $2.5 million, and then we're also not going to have the capital expenditures. But the very next conversation is we're looking for a capital project. So it's just going to be in a different format, but we won't need to repeat the repair of the Winona roof and the septic system. Those projects will be done. But so we'll have the revenue won't reoccur and the expense won't reoccur.
But, Bruce, weren't we talking about, excuse me, we're talking about the budget this year. We asked them for 260. We asked the committee for 267.
Right.
Okay, we're going to be starting with 267 less 2.5.
In revenue.
Starting point.
It'll be a starting point, but again, yeah, this is what I tried to explain to you the other day. If you're not, you don't have the revenue and you don't have the expense, so it's a wash. So you might be starting at 260, you know, a lower amount, but you don't have the revenue coming in anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay, and then with regards to the capital projects, I thought the whole idea of this capital projects was to get the $20 million bond referendum, try to get that passed, and not have to carry a capital project line item.
Exactly.
That's true. That there are still things that the school district still needs to look at a capital project line that they fund through their budget just to address needs throughout a school district. You may decide to do all the capital projects this year based on a capital project referendum. But in the future, we just need to be aware that we should have a capital improvement or a capital project budget line that we fund on a regular basis to address concerns from time to time, and that we're taking care of business or housekeeping needs, or it gets to a point that you have so many things that are in need of repair or enhancement that you do need to put a referendum out there. So we should look to just start up a capital improvement line or a facilities improvement line within our budget. But, you know, all this is going to be based on finances, and when we look at the whole budget, we'll decide if we can actually do that or not.
Dr. Murphy, wouldn't buses be part of that capital project line?
We did that this year. We used some of the one-shot to purchase buses. And
but if we intend to upgrade the lower-end buses, that would be included in a new project line rather than a bond referendum?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Doug, did you have some?
Yeah. As far as presentations, I'd just like if we could have a follow-up presentation on security. I know Wayne came here in September and made an initial presentation to us, and since then we've approved 5 security guards. Just like a follow-up presentation to see what else he's looking for in his budget, if that's possible.
That's possible.
Bruce, did you want to say something?
Just to expand what Tony just mentioned, it's capital project, it's the school buses plus other equipment items that the custodians might use in the buildings or the principals might use. So there are capital projects, items costing more than $750,000, there'll be that's not fixing the infrastructure, but there could be snowblowers, school buses, security cars. Those are considered.
You mean over $750?
Right. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So that type of equipment would go into a capital line. Is that correct?
We call it equipment line. That's correct.
And we discussed that. Tony is right. Last year we discussed this. You know, it's one line, capital projects,
right,
and major equipment.
Is everyone okay with the budget book? Is everyone okay with that? Let's see if we can get a couple of things off the table. Is the budget book okay for everyone? Same as last year. Is that okay? I, for one, would like to see, you know, we're talking about all of these programs and moving in a direction. We need to be able to fund this. So I'd like to see what it's going to take to do that. That's my personal opinion. I don't know how anybody else feels about that. But I think we, you know, we've sent people to conferences, to visitations. We're moving in a direction, and we need to be able to fund this. Education, you know, we're here to provide an education for these youngsters, and I think we need to take a look at that. Depending on what that comes in on, I think then we have to say to the administration, you know, hey, look, we can do this, we can't do this. Is there another way to do it? Is there a least expensive way to do it? You know, and I think that's the way I would like to see us approach this. I don't know about anyone else. Does anyone else have any ideas about that?
Question?
Yes.
I'm not understanding, Mike. You're talking about the project that the board just gave an okay to?
Anything that we're talking about, putting forward a comprehensive program for the youngsters, that being one of the projects, which I'm told is not going to be a significant impact.
Okay.
But anything else that needs to be done, there are lines that we cut. I know there were library lines that were cut. There were equipment lines. What do we need to put together a comprehensive educational program? I think we need to look at that and then move from that point on.
We plan to put together many presentations for the board and sharing the information, whether it be job-embedded coaches. If we'd like to do that as one of our initiatives next year, we'll cost that out and present that to the board and show, you know, what this is going to cost in terms of the total budget, and then make a decision whether we can fund it or not. You know, I believe presently we can do these things, but we also have to remember we still have the great bear of 8 bargaining units that will be without contracts based on what's happening today. But, you know, we're optimistic about settling a few contracts in the next month or so.
Does anyone else have anything they'd like to say as far as how they want to see the budget presented? Is it fair to say that we want to see a comprehensive educational program put forth, and then we take a look at it, and if it doesn't, you know, if it looks like it's going to be something that's, you know, becomes too big of a number, we could always say, hey, look, let's, you know, we could go to the administration and say, come back to us with something else, find another way to do it. Are we okay doing it that way, or do you want to just roll it over?
No,
zero
base? My understanding, Mike, was that's how the superintendent's going to present it.
Well, he's asking for direction.
Well, the direction.
If you want to do a leaning, if everyone's satisfied with how we're going to present the budget, we're going to try to keep it very tax sensitive for the community. And I think I've heard that for the past year or so from everyone here sitting at the table, that's the big concern, is to
Absolutely.
Bring things in at something that's affordable to this community. We're not all these neighboring communities, we're Sachem, and we can't worry about what other people are doing. We have to worry about what we can afford right here, and that's the way we're going to handle things. And that's the charge I've been given. But if that charge has changed, you know, let me know tonight.
No, I'm good with that. Is everyone else okay with that? Yes? 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 Everyone else? That takes care of that. What's next?
Oh.
Okay.
I have one. Bruce, do we know what the contingency number is for the 07-08 budget? The contingency number? Contingency budget. Do you know what the number is?
The law is you can't exceed 4%.
Right. What's that number? Do you know? In amounts of dollar?
Sure.
Dollar amount?
Oh, 2 seconds.
Remember to take out that $2.5 million, Bruce.
I think Ron has
the answer.
It's
about a $10 million increase.
Oh, I thought Ron had the answer 2 minutes ago. I don't know.
It's about a $10 million increase.
How much?
Oh, $10 million increase.
What does that translate to, Bruce?
4%.
4%, okay.
I mean,
roll up those sleeves, young man.
we're going to bring in something that's going to be acceptable to the board, and if not, we're going to have to come back and keep working at it.
All right. Well, that's what we're asking you to do. I think we're all in agreement that we're asking you to do that. Okay. Capital projects direction. Yes.
The technology equipment for our security, Bruce, that also goes into the project line.
Absolutely. That's the kind of equipment I was talking about. When Wayne was talking about the digital cameras.
The cameras, and not just the ones on the buses, but I mean.
That's right, in the buildings.
And what else did
he needed?
What else did Wayne say that he needed?
He needed vehicles. He wanted to get new radio, the walkie-talkies, radio systems. He had an equipment list that we need to be updated.
Night vision cameras, night vision goggles. Yeah, we're gonna address all the security.
Rubber bullets.
So we'll be okay. Capital project direction. Oh, John Stoltz.
One quick question.
Go ahead, John.
And forgive me, maybe I'm once again misunderstanding it, something. I know Dr. Murphy's and comeback was what he feels is appropriate. I know some of the board members, just from the way it sounded, had an idea of a dollar amount that was appropriate. I mean, are we going in two different directions?
I eventually we're going to come to a meeting of the minds.
I'm a fiscal conservative, John, so we're going to
We got to let him work on it. Let him work at it. You know, I mean, it's he has an idea from what we did last year. We all we lived through the 18%.
John, tell me how you feel about this.
I
get it.
I like zeros, Charlie. Zeros.
Rhetorical question. Zeros.
We got to let him work on it, and we'll see where we go from there. That's all.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yes, we
okay.
are.
Okay. Capital project direction. We have some decisions to make regarding the future of capital projects. We had the H2M facilities management group list that we spoke about at length before. We also shared with the board that the principals and custodians of each of the buildings had updated lists and you know wish lists about improving things within their own buildings. And we have all these things. We're going to take this Excel aid, marry that Excel aid to our state aid, and come up with a bond referendum that we hope is very, very low cost. I mean, we were told not to say zero cost by that group a few weeks ago. But we told not to say zero cost, but very low cost project that's close to zero as possibly we can to the community, so we can actually say to the community, it really is going to be a no cost project, but we can't say it's going to be a no cost project. But we have some big decisions we have to make, and I need board direction tonight on this. We have our capital projects committee out there that we want to get going next week. They have the dates already, and we just got to give them direction. But we have to hire an architect to start to look at all that wish list from the buildings to try to cost out some of these things. You know, regardless of if a budget or a bond referendum passes or not, we have to pay the architect. We have several options. We can use H2M presently to help cost this out. We can go back and look at other architects and do some board interviews, or we can use the committee to interview some of these architects and make some suggestions to the board, or have a combination of the committee and a few board members sitting on the interviews. In addition to that, we have to hire a construction manager to work with our architects to help work all this out. So how do we hire the construction manager? Either the board makes a decision, or to do board interviews, or we do let this capital projects committee do some interviews. But if we're going to get this going, we've got to sit down next week with the committees and talk with them and sit down with the board and decide where we want to go. But if we want to get this bond referendum with the school budget vote, we're going to have to move quickly. But again, we don't have to have this voted upon with the school budget. It just makes it a little bit more convenient, and you don't spend an extra $30,000 for elections, and you save Carol a night out, which is most important. But it all depends upon making decisions and moving ahead. And I leave it up to...
Charlie, let's take one issue at a time. The first issue you mentioned was... an architectural firm.
One should be, do you really want to go ahead with a capital project bond referendum?
Well, let's talk about that. Does anyone want to discuss the fact that we need to move on with this? Is there anyone who is opposed to moving on with this capital projects? Anyone? Okay, so it's safe to say that we want to move ahead with this. Is that correct? Okay, so that's number one then.
Next would be an architect.
All right, next would be an architect. Do we stay with H2M, or do you want to go out and interview again? How many of you want to go out again? Raise your hands. Out again? Okay, so we'll go out.
Now, the next part of that is, do we want the Capital Projects Committee to interview, or and a combination of board members? Combination? Okay. Combination? The question was, do you want, if we're going to interview new architects, we'll have the members of the board and also this Capital Projects Committee. Is everybody okay with that? And we'll make a selection as to which board members.
You can do that in a couple of ways, too. You can either have the Capital Projects interview them as their committee, and then have a cadre of board members then meet with the people separately, so in two different rooms, rather than you feel like board members, you know, the committee may feel, the board is pushing this person on me, and I didn't really get it. Or you can, two different rooms, that they interview with this committee, and then you switch, and they switch in rooms, so you can have the time period that, you know, they're scheduled every half hour or so, and then they switch rooms and they...
I personally think I'd like to see a combination of... So we have an idea of where these folks are coming, because I'm assuming that the people who are on this committee have some background in construction, and I know there are some that don't, but there are some that... But I'd like to get a flavor of what they're looking for also. So I don't know if I'd want to... You know, that's just my opinion. Maybe someone else.
Yeah, I would agree with Dr. Murphy. I think it should be two separate. I think the committee should interview, just as they interview for staffing. They do elementary, they do a secondary. They have different phases in their interviewing.
But strictly the budget, just strictly the Capital Projects Committee.
I'm talking about the way it's done. Rather than have everyone sit together, I think the committee should interview. Then the board should interview in separate areas.
Okay, so you want the
that's my opinion. Yes.
So you want the committee, the Capital Projects Committee, to interview, strictly the committee to interview the architectural firms, and then the board to interview afterwards.
That's what I would.
Is everybody good with that? That's fine then. Okay.
Well, they're going to give you.
They'll make some suggestions.
They'll make some suggestions on it.
And then
you're not going to have the entire. I don't believe you're going to have the entire board. You probably have the small.
There'll be a couple of people. Whoever's interested.
Right now, we have Mike Boddy, Tony Falco, and John Siegel, who helped select the committee members. But if anybody else wants to join, maybe.
Question. And that maybe this is, and just a procedural question. If there are happens to be five board members interviewing the architects, is that considered a meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
No, so we'll
try to keep it.
I would have no problem with the three people who helped select the committee do the interviews, and we could have one more if there's someone else who's interested in being involved in that. But I would have no problem with those three people being the basis for the interviews.
Once that both committees make the recommendation to the full board, is the full board then going to be able to question the, or how's it going to go, what's going to happen after the two committees interview and both recommendations are given to the full board?
I think the board then has to make a decision.
Make a decision without interviewing?
Yeah.
Or some of the board members will not be interviewing or talking to the architect.
I mean, then why not have the whole board interview?
Well, that's the question. You
know. Well, I would trust the judgment of the people who...
Well, as long as that's understood, that...
Is there anyone who would... Is everyone okay with that? I would trust the judgment of the members of the board who are on the interviewing committee. And as long as the... my concern is that the people on the Capital Projects Committee, if they bring someone forth, that they, you know, their input is heard also, and that when we do make a recommendation and the recommendation comes to the board, that it's that everyone's on the same page when that happens.
You may want to add the fourth person then.
Yes. Is there anyone who'd like to be the fourth person? Rob? When will these interviews take place? During the workday?
Bruce, when have they taken place in the past?
It was
on one of the committees. It was during
the work day, but we'll coordinate it with the four board members. And the first committee meetings at night, the Capital Committee meetings next week.
You made the... Mike is trying to get me to take his spot. Just because I made you sign those bonds, Mike, really. Rob, can you be available during the day is difficult. Is there someone else who would, you know, I mean, I'll do it. I have no problem. I interviewed the last time I did the interviews, but I'd like to get someone else in who would like to, Douglas, do you want to do it? Do you have time during the day? You are? Okay, then Douglas will be the
fourth. Douglas, you're supposed to be studying. I want to see all A's this quarter.
All right, so Douglas Duncan will be the fourth person. And Deborah's going to take Mike's spot. Okay, here we go. It'll be Deborah, Tony, Douglas, and John. Is that correct? John, are you available during the... Okay. John, I want to get a job where you work, you know. Are they hiring anybody? I'm retired. I don't think I can take a pay cut. All right, so you have the four people then, right? It's Deborah, it's Tony. It's too late, Deborah. You can't have buyer's remorse now. It's Deborah, Tony, Douglas, and John. Sounds like a good group to me. I trust these people implicitly. Okay. Rob.
These architects that we're hiring are going to be in conjunction with H2M. We're going to be using H2M, I'm assuming, for part of these projects, and an architect. Is that?
No, we're interviewing because we're getting, you know, we're looking for a new architect. Is that correct?
We're interviewing everyone.
I'm on the assumption that we're looking to just
You would include H2M, one of the people's being interviewed.
Okay. Because it's we're looking at a lot of capital improvements here. Are we going to trust that we're one architect, or are we going to split it up? That's my question.
The way I thought we were going to do, we're going to break it up to different architectural firms. I mean, not get into the same situation we were previously in.
My second question is once we select architects, I would highly recommend that we do a very thorough background check, and that's not getting the names of the schools from the architects, but maybe putting out calls to facilities people in different districts to find out if they have experience with them.
I think what we did the last time is we asked them for districts that they worked in, and we made phone calls.
My concern is they're really going to give you the best districts that they worked
in. No, believe me, we checked into all the districts that they were involved in, and we got mixed reviews on some of them. Some came across. The one firm that I thought was great ended up having some really bad reviews from different districts that they didn't give us. There's a way of finding out who was where, so we would do that.
Okay.
Mike Bergen would be a big help with something like that also. All right, I think Deborah just begged off this committee. Is that true? Okay, Mike, it's Mike Boddy instead of Deborah. You have it now, Carol? Yes.
Regarding the selection of the architects to be interviewed, is that going to be done by administration to come up with a consensus of local architects in the area? And how many are we going to get?
Bruce, how did we do it last time?
We will develop a bid spec with input from the board and subcommittee. We have to take the current bid specs, give it, and then based upon those bid specs, we'll send it out. Seeking responses from any architectural response, and we'll have to do the same process with construction managers, actually.
Bruce, how many did we have last time? I think we had five or six, right?
Six firms responded.
Six firms responded, that's right. No, Mike, you're on the committee. Forget it. I think Harry was on the committee. Yeah, it was you, myself, and and Harry, I think, yeah. There was three of us last time. There's four this time. Okay, so you have that again, right? Carol, you okay with that? Construction manager. Is everyone okay with doing that, too? Also, we have to, I would imagine the same people same people would take a look at a construction manager. Okay, that takes care of that. Anything else?
We're dealing with that. Bruce, anything else that we need direction for tonight?
No, as long as the board members who are volunteering, that this is going to have to move pretty rapidly. There'll be a lot of work developing these bid specs and interviewing these to Because what Mike and Ed Miller prepared, as you see, there's no prices here of these 20 pages of items. So once we hire the architects, they're going to need several months to put prices next to these items.
To cost it out. Right?
To cost it out. So if we want all this to happen, the board has to adopt this by March 31st. It's a lot of work. So it'll be pretty intensive for the next few months.
Mike's body lives for this. He loves these committees. So it'll get done.
Question for you, Dr. Murphy. If I know a while back we had taken a leaning on adding on looking at some other projects, specifically the playgrounds. Can we take a vote to lean to give the playgrounds to the capital committee to start looking at and make a determination if we can move forward with them?
Well, we'll give them once we have some costs out. If you want the architects or somebody to cost out what it would do to enhance the elementary playgrounds, you know, we can do that as well. We had received that direction before, so we were going to add it to our list of all sorts of projects out there.
It's on one of these. So
yeah.
It's only one school, though.
Well, that you'll get an idea of cost, wouldn't you?
We're gonna get an idea overall, but we're going to add that, and we're going to take that into consideration when we're putting together the whole referendum.
Just one point about that. The more we ask the architects or construction managers to do beforehand, which is good because we'll get more thorough information, but that's going to be more expense we'll have to be paid even if the bond issue is not approved by the community. So there's a cost benefit to that. That we're going to be asking these professionals to go out, give us, let's say, the playgrounds. And if you want him to evaluate all 12 playgrounds, they're going to have to get structural engineers and determine that's going to be a cost on their side, but even if the bond issue is defeated, we would be responsible for that cost.
But we could have the board, rather than doing that, Bruce, we could have, say, this capital projects committee come back with a recommendation for each elementary school, say, $50,000 worth of playground equipment. I'm just throwing a number. I'm not saying that's the number.
Right.
$30,000 worth of equipment for an elementary school.
That's one way of handling it, but the playgrounds aren't equal as we stand today. Right. Some are a year old. Some are 30 years old.
Right.
So 50,000 in one school will get them planted with regular. 50,000 in another school would double what they just bought last year.
Okay.
So maybe you have to get a starting point.
Maybe we'll have to do that internally before sending anything
right.
out there.
Right. Okay. We have to set the parameters.
Doug, go ahead.
Bruce, my question, I don't want to sound like a defeatist, but if, for argument's sake, the bond does go down, we still have that $5 million in Excel aid, so we could use that money to pay the architects and stuff, right? No?
No, you still need voter approval for the Excel aid. We don't have the authority just to spend Excel aid.
Okay.
So you would have to have then another vote, and actually it's $60,000 for a vote. $30,000 was a few years ago.
John?
Getting back to the playgrounds for a second. You know, I know when we took the leaning, I know it's not the bleachers, Deborah, but I know when we took the leaning for the playgrounds, we talked about getting each of the 12 elementary schools the same playground. You know, no matter if they replaced it a couple of years ago or it was 30 years old, and I thought that's what the leaning we took and it was approved. At least the leaning was yes. Is that still the case?
My understanding was that I know to Tamarack. Didn't Tamarack just raise a lot of money for a playground?
Yes, they did.
Right.
And are they installing it now?
No, they didn't donate it to the school district yet.
They have to donate it to us, and then it'll go back.
They raised about $30,000 so far.
So right. I think we have to look at it as individually, John. I don't know how you do that, you know.
Yeah, I know the discussion was last time that any money that any schools raised as a fundraiser would have went to other items they wanted to purchase, you know, any accessories for the playground. Each school was going to get a blue Model 12, for, you know, and any other school could add it. This way there was equality throughout the school district.
So, in other words, what you're saying that there's a basic playground that every school will have, and then if anyone has raised any money, they can add on to it?
Correct. That's how I understood it. I mean, maybe it was
that everyone's correct. Understanding of that?
Yes.
Okay, so. Okay. All right. I have visitors. Kyle and Elizabeth, I know you're high school students, and you guys have been here a long time, so I'm sorry it took so long to get you up here, but come on up. know about it just now. Is the microphone on?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys both go to East, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Good evening, Dr. Murphy, board members. My name is Kyle here, and I am a senior at Sachem East. First, I would like to say that if we planned on speaking tonight, we would have dressed more appropriately. I'm here before you speaking about several concerns I have pertaining to the secondary program vision. First of all, about the Suffolk program, about students going to Suffolk for college credit, you mentioned that students with good academic records could get a real college experience, but I feel that these students would have more of a higher aspirations after high school, that they wouldn't end up going to Suffolk. And one of my friends that I used to work with this year, she did not attend Suffolk because she graduated last year. She didn't attend Suffolk because she was moving in October and couldn't transfer her credits to the community college in South Carolina. So I just feel that that wouldn't be effective for that group of students. And also, I was confused on the aviation program. Are they going to fly planes or no?
Not here at Sachem. They could opt to attend BOCES where they could fly planes.
So they will fly planes through BOCES then?
Through BOCES, correct.
Okay. For the ninth period, I wanted to know who would not have to attend that.
Just about every 99% of the students wouldn't need it a ninth period. Are you talking about the academic study hall period?
Yes.
Well, it's just by the time eighth period ends and athletics starts or arrowettes or cheerleading, there's a delay of time. What we want to do is we want to have kids make appropriate decisions right now. And it's not every sport, but there's a lot of sports or cheerleading or arrowettes where practice starts immediately after school. And kids then have to make a decision whether they attend their athletic practice or cheerleading or arrowettes practice, or they go to, let's say, extra help. And, you know, most kids are then put in a situation where they have to make a very difficult decision, that if they don't showcase their talents on the field or the court or in the auditorium, they won't get the same opportunity as someone else who's on that team. This way, if we have a period of time where kids can decide, yes, I can go to extra help because sports isn't going to start for 40 minutes, or I could go to a club, or I could go to the computer lab, or I can go to the library, we're creating opportunities, and we're saying that this is an academic institution first, and then a co-curricular institution secondary. So But if you have, for example, someone mentioned basketball. Basketball practice starts at 7 o'clock. Go home on the bus, eat dinner, come back, do your homework, and then attend basketball. It's not a mandatory study period. There's going to be options for the kid these student-athletes can do after school.
Okay. Are there any other students besides student-athletes that would have to go to the
ninth? Not that I could think of right now. We're looking at arrowheads, possibly cheerleading, athletics, but other kids can just get involved in the co-curricular activities and just do that. They don't have to go to study hall and then go to clubs later.
Okay. And also, pertaining to the AP classes on how you're encouraging more AP classes, less honors classes,
Not less honors classes, Kyle.
Well, with certain subjects, you've eliminated the honors program.
You want kids to take the most rigorous program. We talked about this at length when we had a private meeting. The most rigorous program, because that's what college admissions officers are looking for, the most rigorous program that's available. So what we're also doing with the Suffolk County Community College is giving options to kids who are not in the top 40% of the class, but sort of that middle to 40 to 60%, maybe even beyond that, to take the option. It's not about some of the things you mentioned earlier, I can't really remember, but it's also mentioned about affordability. Most of these credits will transfer to all state schools, many of the private local schools, but if they're going to transfer to South Carolina or North Carolina, I'm not really sure they're going to do that. But it's an option for people to take, and then it's an individual decision. They don't have to opt for this. They can decide to stay within our regular Sachem program. But we're trying to present different things for different kids that are within our school system.
Okay, and also about the APs. I just feel that before they're saying that all the students are excelling at them, I really feel that they should be looked at the drop rates in some of the classes, because if they don't have the opportunity to take honors, a lot of students are choosing not to take any of that. Like, I know a lot of seniors chose not to take a math because there's only AP statistics or AP calculus for them because they already took pre-calculus and there's nowhere else for them to go. And then a lot of them, when they tried to take the class, found out that they really couldn't handle the class and now they had to drop and there's nowhere for them to go except for into analysis.
That's why we developed the AP statistics, because it's a rigorous class, but it's, you know, certainly not calculus A, B, or B, C.
Okay.
So it was an option for our students to take.
Okay, and one more thing about the start time. I just wanted to know if, like, something could be shown about lateness correlating to an earlier start time. So that's all I have.
Yeah, I guess down the road we'll see if it's, you know, we've had people bring up that, you know, if we're starting early at 7:20, you're going to have more latenesses. I think if we started first period at 9 o'clock, you'd have people, you know, kids trying to cut it to the last minute that I could get that few hours of winks. So it everyone's going to try to push the envelope when it comes to sleep. But will there be higher DCs in first period next year compared to first period this year? There's a lot of DCs in that zero period, I could tell you, and we have the stats for that, a lot. And you know the kids aren't going to get up at 6:45 in the morning to take the at-risk kids getting up at 6:45 in the morning or getting here at 6:45 in the morning to take those required courses. It's a challenge for them, that's for sure.
Okay.
Kara?
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Pavsik, and I currently attend Sachem East as a senior. I'm currently enrolled in the Wind Ensemble program, which is offered zero period. When would Wind Ensemble be offered if zero period was eliminated?
During the day.
What
was that again? Say that again. I couldn't understand.
When would Wind Ensemble be offered if zero period was eliminated?
During the day.
What?
During the day.
Yeah. Okay. There was a reference made to the computer labs, and currently, from my own experience, the library is the only access to computers for students after school in a supervised area. Will the computer labs be opened every day? Because the library isn't opened every day.
Well, we're talking about budget, but we would like to open up more of the computer labs for kids after school in a supervised setting so that you have students who are able to work on research or word processing to do their papers and things like that. So we have a different vision of what we want to what our after-school program is going to look like for the 07-08 school year.
Okay, and if athletes were made to stay after school, would textbooks be offered to them to do their homework? Because most of my homework is in textbooks.
Well, if you have, do you have a textbook? Do you bring it home?
You have to bring it home. You don't bring it to school.
The textbook you can take to the library, to the cafeteria study hall, to
but anywhere. Currently in the library, the textbooks are offered. Would the supervised area be in the library, or would it be in a separate area?
It'd be in different areas. So if there's a need for textbooks, we'll provide those as well.
Okay. Anything else? With regards to the sports team practices, I know you covered that, but would they necessarily be later than 5 o'clock? Would they end
No,
they'll
be right after. Generally, in the fall sports program, for right after the ninth period ends, so it's be similar to what the start of the athletic program is today.
But they can't be earlier than 2:38?
Paul, you want to answer that question? I'm not looking at the schedule, but if school ends during eighth period at X time, athletics isn't going to start until one period later, 42 minutes later.
So it would start at 2:45 or 3 o'clock?
Between 2:45 and 3.
Don't want to lose sight of the fact that there may be still a small segment of the student population that will need to be in a class during that ninth period. So if we started the athletics earlier, those students would be shut out. So that's why we're starting.
It's a very small.
It's a very small segment of the population. So that's why we really can't start it before the 2:45. We wouldn't want those students to not have the opportunity.
So all sports teams would have to wait till after 2:38, though?
Yes.
Including cheerleading?
Including cheerleaders.
Okay.
We want them to be in the study hall, or the library, or getting a jump on their homework. Now, that's the goal is, and many school districts are doing this because they're making kids make the right choices. Right now, you could have students who need academic help or intervention, and there's lots of extra help offered throughout our schools, and they're not taking advantage of it because they're worried about getting out to the field or the court or the auditorium, wherever their practice may be, on time. And we don't want to put the squeeze on kids to make the right choice. And even though our coaches are very understanding, when you do go to extra help, and that comes first, the kids don't always see it that way because they worry and they fret about, but I can't showcase, I'm not showcasing my talents, but, you know, Kyle's out there doing it, and I have to compete against him, and he might have an extra 10, 15 minutes over me, and that could make the difference between Kyle starting and me sitting on the bench another year.
I know that my track coach starts at 2:45, though, and I still go to 5 o'clock. Would you allow the coaches to go later? Like, are they permitted to go later, or they would have to end at 5 for everyone to make the 5:15?
Same type of whatever the time period that the track coaches are going to give. You know, you got to stick to that. There's some Section 11 rules that say you're only supposed to practice a certain amount in each sport each day. And you're not supposed to go over that time period.
Okay. Thank you. Okay,
just to touch on that. If they're going to have same amount of...
Is it 3 minutes up yet?
Because I know you've waited a long time, so would you please ask your questions and we'll wrap it up, okay?
Okay. If the practices are going to be the same amount of time, but they're going to be later, essentially, aren't
we
getting...
It's not going to be later. It's going to be the same time as what we're doing today.
Well, no, because school ends at 2:07. I start at... We're on the deck in the pool at 2:30. If ninth period's going to end at 2:38, there's still, like... a window between 2:07 and 2:30, so there's going
to
be that same window, I would imagine.
You're going to have to wait to start swimming practice or any other practice.
Yeah, so the practice is going to start later, but if it's the same time, then our whole day will end later and start earlier at the same time.
We're still taking a nine-period day. Even though we're eliminating zero period, it's still nine periods for us.
Okay. Yeah.
So pretty much you're saying that everyone has to take a zero period if they're going to stay for sports.
It's not zero period.
But it's a ninth period, so it equals nine periods altogether.
It's a time for you to jump on your homework, on a number of other things. Now you have athletes who can participate in clubs and all other things. Is it a longer day in a high school? Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for waiting, too. May I suggest that you youngsters head home and be careful going home. Thank you for staying. Had I known you wanted to speak, I would have had you speak first. I didn't know you guys were going to talk. So, oh, okay. Get home safely, please. Barbara, you're up next. I know you were drinking. I watched you with that water bottle back there. Douglas has the bladder of a hummingbird. He's been in that here every 2 minutes. So.
I apologize for not speaking about this earlier, but it was a little difficult getting in here earlier. I just have one concern, and I don't know whether anyone picked up on it. I did, maybe because it affects me. But realistically, we could have 6th and 7th graders on bus stops with 9th, 10th, and 11th, and 12th graders. Because to go in for zero period... at 7:25, and the high school kids are going in for a 7:20 start time, they could all be on the bus stop at the same time. That's just something you might want to look into. That's a wide range of kids and a large group of kids at some bus stops. And having had a child go into sixth grade this year and a child go into North, fifth grade parents are very fearful of eighth grade students, and eighth grade parents going into ninth grade are very fearful of juniors and seniors, and now you could literally have them all at the bus stop in the morning at the same time, waiting for zero period for middle school and first period for the high school. And on some corners, that could be 20, 25 kids. So that's my concern.
We'll ask Steve to take a look at it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks
you
for
be
waiting.
Able to juggle the bus stop so that they're not all at the same corner.
You can drink now. Vinny Trier. Or you put Vince. You know, you'd rather be called Vince? That's true. And I've done it.
And you have.
Go.
First of all, good evening, and I hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving. Second of all, I will try to keep it down to 3 minutes because I don't want to have Charlie lose his attention span. Next. In listening to the kids tonight, wind ensemble is going to become a credited class that they will take during the day? Because if they happen to take it during the day, then I'm assuming they're going to get credit for it? Excellent. So what are they going to give up during the day that they're going to have? What other class will they have to give up during the day that they're going to have to lose to take wind ensemble, or will they be giving up lunch?
Guess that's an individual decision on the students of what.
So they will have to give something up then.
Well, I think in the, you know, I don't have some of the old music and arts people here, but I believe this was in the day before reconfiguration, and this was put outside the day after the 2003-2004 school year. So this is a new concept. It's only been in the district to have it outside the school day for only a few years now. So it's not like we're doing something that's really dramatic and draconian to the students. Just making a choice.
It's not a question of being draconian or changes, because in Sachem things, you know, goes with the sine wave, as they say.
Okay.
But the issue for me is that looking at, I remember having kids go through the school here and hearing other students complain about they're taking so many courses and classes they had to give up lunch, because they would literally run out of time during the day to take the academics. But the issue for me to come up here is, listen to the kids, but I was reading through the documents, and, you know, I haven't made many of the meetings, but something caught my eye, and that was in the facilities issue. I heard comments tonight that were eerily reminiscent of comments that were passed back in 1999, and there were only two people who sit up on the dais who were here at that time who may remember the comments I'm now going to repeat. We need to move quickly. We need to have votes now. From a person who's been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, don't want to do it again, I'm not saying learn from other people's mistakes, but as soon as somebody says you must go fast, it is the best time to throw out the anchor. And as soon as somebody says, trust me, you turn around and you ask them why. And my heartfelt recommendation, having been through the architect review directly, is that in the end it will be the board who sinks or swims by what the architect draws with the pretty picture with the pendant they have. And for as good as some of them are, some are really engineers who hire out architects. Some are architects in name only. Some are really just engineers. And you need to hire architects who are looking for this. You are going to need architects for their particular speciality. And just saying that, well, we're going to check them out, makes the hair in the back of my neck stand up. So I would say to you all, from the board members' perspective, you all need to review that, because whether it be $228,600,000 or you're looking at $20 million, the person you need to trust and check is the one whose face you see in the mirror in the morning. Because nobody from administration stands before the public and says, we did it. They made the decision. They're the Board of Education. They made the decision. So, and that's the way the public sees it. They don't vote on administration every year, and they don't vote on the budget. They vote on the board members and where they believe that their district is heading in. So do as you wish, but take it from somebody who's been there, done that. If I had the ability to wind the clock back, those are some of the questions I would want more thoroughly answered to better satisfaction. As far as having a committee, yes, you could have your committee, you'd look at them. It's nothing wrong with having an extra pair of eyes to look at it and been there. Believe I was on that twice, once on the technology committee reviewing architects and engineers, and then on the bigger project. Trust people. I heard comment to it, well, I trust everybody else's judgment. And then as soon as something begins to go just a little bit bad, it'll be, well, you know, I should have, I could have, I would have, or why did you do that? This way, if you all review together, you all get to ask questions that somebody else will say, well, if they asked that, let me ask this. Yes, it may take a little longer, but nothing of any quality happens quickly. And sometimes you need to slow the process down just a tad. And on the issue of the criteria of the architects, this is the tool of the architect. It has no innate knowledge. You want to know what the criteria is of the person and their skills up here of what you want them to take this to put it to the paper with. And if anything from any other lessons that we'll learn is have them bring drawings, pictures, visit their work. See what they've stood up. How did it go up? How did it work? Was the board's vision actually developed? Because just to ask the question, somebody says, they had some problems. But if you actually go out and see and touch and talk to the people who were married to them during that project, it would give you a completely different view and feel of what architects draw. Because in the end, all they do is they draw pretty pictures. It is up to the engineers, you to fund, and other people to build. Bleachers, turf fields, aidability, other issues. When you charge, my question would be, are we looking only for those projects that can be aided, or are we looking at other projects that we will have to fund ourselves completely and directly? Been some discussion for many years. The public voted it down 3 times about putting up bleachers and turf fields and things. If those can't be aided by the state, which they can't be because we've never been able to develop an architect who's willing to sign on the dotted line and say that they're a true safety hazard, then we need to look at those things that are aidable, maybe aidable, absolutely not aidable, and then pick and choose how you'd like to slide across the categories and charge them out before we say or even infer to the public it's going to cost you nearly nothing. Everything cost us somewhere, somehow. I heard the comment tonight about, we have to pay the architect. Yes. Is there aid for that? Unless the rules have changed drastically, pre the bond vote, the answer is no. So we'd have to pay for that. So every time that you do want somebody to go out and look at something, it does cost money. I don't think the rules have changed, but I heard a comment passed tonight that we really can't change what H2M put on the table because we can't do that. And as far as I understood and still understand, you can change anything you want because anything that anybody brings to you are strictly recommendations. They only become the power of force once the board votes, not when they lean, but when they stick their hand up in the air and they say, I want this or I don't want this. So anytime that anybody would like to change anything, in a sense, you're the sovereign rule and you get to change and decide what you'd like to do. I would like to see, in a personal note, even though my kids are way out of school, as an example, what goes on in the elementary schools. I still think it's a crying shame that to this day, PTAs feel the need to have to fix their play areas themselves. You know, if we were a small district of a $10 million means and had 7,000 kids in it, well, that's a problem. When you're running budgets at $250 million and we're arguing back and forth about a $50,000 or a $40,000 play area for the kids, that's what this is all supposed to be about. It's about those students. So I thank you for your time. Hope everybody has a nice Thanksgiving. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vince. Lori Ferraro. Sorry, Lori, we kept you so long.
All right. The first issue, the zero period, you hear so much negative. I want to say that I think the move you're making personally for the changing the schedule is a good one. I happen to have a child who does go to zero period, and today's a perfect example of one of her days. She went in at 6:30 this morning and got home at 9:15 this evening. So having that little bit of time period for her to do her study or to go for extra help is great, because obviously she's involved in a lot of things, and she does try to juggle her free time. So I think it's great that you're trying to make sure that these kids do have that time. So I think that's wonderful. The next thing is, one question I have is, if you're all saving staff, this for you, Mr. Cobb, if you're saving money on the staff from the zero period, how are you saving, because you're going to need them in ninth period, so it's really not, is that a wash, pretty much?
Well, really, until we run the numbers to see how many youngsters are involved with that ninth period, and don't forget that's a supervisory situation, it's not a teaching situation in ninth period, so it's not the same cost factor.
Yeah, but the kids who stay for extra help, that will be teachers, though, doing that, correct?
But it's not a teaching assignment as the same as teaching a class.
Okay. Very good. Now, one thing I'm here for, I wanted to ask questions. In Sequoia, they got two basketball hoops when the school was built. One of them was knocked down the first year by a delivery truck, I believe. It's still never put up, and the children have been begging for that to be replaced. I don't know if the school needs to, but if it was knocked down by a delivery truck, can't they go after the delivery service to reimburse us to put that back up? Why does the school have to pay for that?
I'll look at that tomorrow, and I'll get back to you on it.
Excellent. And also, the floor in the hall by the gym is really, really horrible. I know you're aware of it. It's buckling terribly. When you walk, you can actually trip on it. What are the plans to repair that sometime soon?
I'll ask Mike Bergen. Do you know about this? This is at Sequoia?
No, I don't know about that.
It's over by the gym and the auxiliary gym, over by the attendance office. The whole floor is all rippled.
The tile floor is in the hallway?
Yeah.
That's part of what we're trying to get the contractor to address.
Well, they really need to do something, I think, soon, because it's pretty dangerous. It's getting worse, and you walk and you trip. You know, you catch your feet, and I think before you have some kind of major injury, I mean.
I'll go over there tomorrow and take a look at it as well.
And my last real big request here is, when East and Sequoia were built, wasn't there any allowance made for any kind of sign? I think it's really, really awful that you have two brand new beautiful schools and there's no sign so you can communicate with the parents. That's a major issue, especially in middle school. You know, at least if there was a sign, there would be some way for us to be able to get some kind of message out to the parents that aren't reading emails or getting paperwork home. And I know it's come up by many, many people, and this is a real issue that we'd like to see. Is there any way the board could put some kind of sign there, give us some kind of money that we can then start some kind of outside committee that can get a sign put up? But shouldn't there have been something budgeted for that?
I'm not sure. Bruce, in the past, how most of the signs, I think, have been donated by various parents.
Right. The building has a building sign on the building itself. The signs you're talking about out front,
the marquees.
Generally the marquees, the PTAs have donated.
Not allowed to anymore.
Yeah, then the only other way that we would have to budget for it, you know, create something and budget for it.
Can you look into that? Because I think it's important, especially when
we can evaluate the cost on it. But, you know, with all these other things going on, you know, it may not be a priority number one.
Mm-hmm.
We can take an value. At Sachem High School East, you know, you would have to put an electronic sign four stories high for anyone to read from the road.
It's not even so important that they read it from the road, but at least if they read it when the parents are coming in to pick up. You know, it's all right if the people going by don't, especially where it's located, but it's so, you know, especially at Sequoia, it's so when the parents come in and they drop off, they can see what events are going on and they're aware of it because they're not always getting.
You're going to bring it up to the principals and see how they want to.
We've discussed it. I know we have a couple issues. Why I want to see where you guys can go with it before we, you know, as a school go.
Sometimes you have student classes when they leave, they end up donating these things. Class of, I think North did that for their sign. It's not like a recall.
They're so expensive.
There's a sign on their sign that says donated by the class of. So we'll take a look at it.
All right.
But I'll get back to you on the Sequoia issues tomorrow.
Excellent. And I got one more question. Last year I asked, I know this is, the two high schools had theater productions. They were both supposed to be allowed theater, two productions each, a musical and a drama production. East never was able to get theirs off the ground, And I wanted to know where the money that was allotted to them for that production went. What did they ever do with it? And every time I asked, I just got different.
The theater production or the music? I know they had.
No, they had their musical. Both schools had their musical. Only North had.
If they never had the drama presentation, then, and if there was leftover money because they didn't use that producer, that money just goes back into the general fund and just goes back to the general fund. I mean,
so they can't use that this year to offset costs?
It's gone. It's gone.
All right. Okie dokie. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Lori, have you looked into the cost of the sign?
We have.
Do you know the cost?
Well, we have to go back now and look at just the basic signs. I know the principal had expressed a desire to have one of the digital, you know, the electronic ones. I mean, that is more really up for the high school, but they are expensive. Regardless of what you put up, they're expensive.
Give me a ballpark figure.
Well, I know the digital ones, they run, you know, but they're really, if you want to know, that's like $20,000. But I want to know the other ones.
The regular ones are 10 to 15.
Okay. So I'll settle for any sign.
Thank you, Lori. So put that down. Lori's going to buy a sign for this.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for waiting so long. Future agenda items? Anyone? I think we've pretty much covered it. The next meeting is Thursday, December 7th, right here, 8 p.m., and the meeting following that is Tuesday, December 19th. Executive session right away, folks. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you for being here. So moved. Thank you. Second, Mike. Second by Douglas.